You're buying Clayton's truck.
Not buying his truck. I'm taking his truck.
Does he know this?
I'm not giving him cash for that beat up piece of junk.
Well, he is. I don't think we can disclose where he's heading. No, well, he said it.
No, he didn't.
He said it online.
Well, did he? Well, his Facebook page is very manicured.
Is it?
Yeah. It's very manicured.
Well, just like him. He's a beautiful man.
I don't know. His nails could do better. But his Facebook page is beautifully manicured to make sure the outside world doesn't really get in and see some of the stuff that he posts.
Right.
For good reasons.
Yeah. He wants to be respectable, unlike
me personally,
us.
For what he's doing, I would just delete off of social media and come back as Brad Northeastern.
Or Buck Dancer, like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yep. Rusty Shackleford.
Rusty Trombonish. That was just... I hate that we have... I should put that other 10 minutes at the end of this episode just so people have it, but I hate when my mic doesn't work right. It just makes me crazy. I just go crazy. And I'm already not doing well because of my cold. But I'm here. I can't let the people down.
Because the people are you.
I am the people. The listeners are me. Okay. Here we go. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us in iTunes, like us on Facebook, and become a subscriber on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. Without your financial support, independent media like this cannot exist, so it's imperative, especially in these times, that you support all the shows that you love, but especially this one. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you great bonus content. Sometimes it's like almost 30 to 40, 50, 60 extra minutes a week for those $5 and up. You get an RSS feed that you can easily put into your podcatcher. And then we also give you commercial-free podcast, 128 stereo. It sounds great. Much, you know, if you're listening on the big feed, you're missing out. So $5 a month. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in our Facebook group or Discord channel. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Please be warned that the show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. In this show, we're going to bring you North Korea. We're going to talk a little bit more about net neutrality. Harry's got some strong words to say for the people. Yeah. We're also going to... what else are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about Trump and Pocahontas, and we're going to talk about all kinds of fun things.
You have a large, large list here. You're going to have leftovers like Thanksgiving.
Yes, and the Consumer Protection Bureau. Yeah, we have. I have a stack of stuff like Rush. I have a whole stack of things that we're just not even going to get to. We're just going to do the four subjects this time, and then we're going to. I need to do like a leftover show. Harry Price is my co-host, by the way.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Harry. I need to do like a leftover show, but we can't add. Trust me, the statistics won't allow me to add a third show. We've not lost any people. Our average is still up a little bit because I was really nervous that if you add a second show, you cannibalize your numbers because people go, "This is too much. I'm unsubscribing." Mm-hmm. So. Fortunately, that has not happened. But I think what I'm going to do is when we have too much news like we have, like we literally have 10 stories that I want to do that we're not going to get to tonight. Maybe I should do a solo show like Miranda on her new private Snapchat on the Chris Spangle Show feed. So if you didn't know there was a Chris Spangle Show feed, check it out. There is.
Which a lot of people go to that one just to hear you talk about podcasting stuff, though.
Yeah. So I essentially basically just put in, you know, a lot of how-to podcast stuff on there. So if my voice sounds funky, it is because my voice is funky. I, as I told you last week, had a sinus infection, and so we are I'm struggling. My voice is struggling right now, Harry. Yeah. I may have to stop and cough a lot.
It's normal, par for the course.
Right.
But you know. Did you have a good, fun Thanksgiving, though?
I did. I had a great Thanksgiving. How about you?
It was great. It was awesome. I got to be the creepy uncle in the corner talking about, you know, like, you know, politics and libertarianism and all kinds of different stuff. And then my mother brought over her, you know, her crazy friend, and we got to talk. And we sat in the, you know, in the kitchen and went to all conspiracy theories while everyone was doing dishes and trying to get rid of us.
I didn't talk about politics once. It was great.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine by me. I was ready for the break. Mm. I took 4 days of not reading the news. It was really nice. Mm. So, but we don't have that luxury this week. We've got too much to talk about, Harry.
You're right. I'm sorry.
We should start with North Korea.
Republic.
The only reason I want to do this story, what'd you say?
The Republic.
Yeah.
To dig at people who keep going to the United States Republic. Yep, so is North Korea.
Exactly. China. I know. I like those people. we're a republic, not a democracy. Those people are like grammar Nazis to me. Like, mm-hmm. I know. I get it. Mm-hmm. You're just really bothering me. so North Korea launched a rocket. And this is actually a really big deal. Okay. And the response from Trump, as I heard the press conference, a few things stood out to me that concerned me,
okay,
which we'll get to. But first, North Korea today, just a few hours ago, fired off a missile, not a nuclear missile, but a missile. The missile took off from Pyongsong, a town northeast of Pyongyang, a capital, at 3:17 a.m., and it flew east for about 53 minutes before landing off of Honshu, Japan's largest island, nearly 600 miles from the launch site. The missile was fired high into the air, reaching a maximum altitude of around 2,800 miles, and an arc similar to the North's two previous intercontinental ballistic missiles, or ICBMs, which were launched in July. They're much longer. David Wright, a senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, said the missile performed better than the two fired in July, with a potential range of more than 8,000 miles, able to reach Washington or any other part of the continental United States. It's pretty impressive, he said of the flight. This is building on what they've done before. It's muscle flexing to show the U.S. that they're going to continue to make progress. They probably fitted it with a mock payload, essentially, mm-hmm. that was next to nothing to show that this rocket could go far.
Yeah.
And with an actual nuclear payload, it wouldn't probably go as far. But people are saying that this could reach the east coast of the United States. That's how high it got.
Right.
How much altitude it achieved. So the other part of this is that they did it at night.
Mm-hmm.
And in every other missile test, they essentially roll these missiles out for days,
mm-hmm.
and signal that they're going to do it. This one, they didn't do that. They just rolled it out at night, filled the gas up horizontally as it was laying on the truck bed, and then shot it off. And so there was no warning that this was coming, whereas South Korea, Japan, and the United States had warning before.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty significant rocket.
Yeah, because usually it's that show of force or show like that muscle flexing. This one was like, could they do this at night? Could we do this at darkness if we had to?
Right.
You know, how fast could we actually do this? And it's like, that's why it's concerning.
So this comes after just another round of really tight sanctions and Trump's Asia trip, which everybody kind of expected after his trip to Asia that it would, Trump doesn't call him short and fat, but that the little short fat man,
mm-hmm.
in North Korea would launch a rocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's... That's why this one is like, it's very weird, and it is right after that, you know, of Trump labeling North Korea as the supplier of terrorism, or the one of the people that helped terrorism go out and do that. So it's... Oh, that's loud.
Sorry.
That one like freaked me out a little.
I'm dying over here. I'm literally dying, Harry.
It's okay. It's okay. And when you do die, you know, I want you to know we will carry on.
Look at me. I am Harry. I am the leader now.
Nothing has changed.
You will listen to me. A few reasons. Yes, you could be concerned that this could reach the eastern seaboard. Mm-hmm. But you really have to understand that North Korea is Go ahead.
Yeah, but it's a concern if it hits the western coast.
Exactly.
It's just how high it gets. But like the other thing is, like, can it get the payload in there? How much resources do they really spend in this guy?
Right. No. I live in the eastern part of the United States, so that's what I care about. If you live in, let's be honest, if they hit California with a rocket, would we be sad?
We would send thoughts and prayers.
Okay? Oh, I would thoughts and prayers so hard.
And depends on if it's NorCal or SoCal.
Right.
Southern California. Oh, no, not Finland.
Stay away from the technology up north.
Yeah, but
if you're going to go north, aim for, like, Oregon.
Yeah.
Not Washington, because I like Amazon.
Yeah, and that's why it's all weird about this whole, like, DPRK thing, is because when that soldier defected over from North Korea to the South Korea side, like, when they got into the hospital, they were finding, like, massive, like, worms inside of this guy's gut, his intestine tract.
Yeah.
And found this guy's liver was shutting down. This was, like, one of their soldiers.
You have to understand, in North Korea, to be a soldier is to be you may not be in the very top class.
Mm-hmm.
That's reserved for rich people and super supporters of Kim. Then the next class is scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Below that is soldiers. Somewhere around, then kind of like, if you, there's a whole community of Japanese who went, you know, Japan occupied Korea before World War II. And so
it's a very nice way of saying the way Japan was over in Korea.
Yeah, well, occupied is the right word, but they were, what would you call it?
Subjugating, oppressing the Korean people, bastardized their language.
Erasing their heritage.
Heritage, everything. It just destroyed everything in Korea.
So there was a large population of Japanese. They are somewhere on the social rank of soldiers. And for whatever reason, but the Japanese families always have done better because they had Japanese currency.
Mm-hmm.
When the switch took place. And there's actually a lot of there's a lot of North Koreans as well. There's a whole district of North Koreans that are North Korean who are educated in Japan at private schools. So even almost 100 years later, those ties still exist. But then there's like everybody else,
yeah.
You know, and farmers below that, workers, and then there's kind of an untouchable class. So for a soldier soldiers in North Korea are supposed to get the best of, but oftentimes they can't even get socks, they can't get underwear. It's really untenable because in the 90s, the North Koreans went through a great famine. So Kim Il-sung died in 1994. And when the Soviet Union collapsed in the early 90s, that they lost all that state support and all that cash and mm-hmm. all those raw materials from Russia and China. And it just got cut off right at the end of the 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And then Kim Il-sung died in 94. And then Jong Il took over, and so the economy just rapidly started to tank. And so what they did in North Korea is they instituted a policy of basically military aggression towards the United States, Japan, and South Korea as a way to keep solidarity. And so they just continually build up new military threats.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of keep everybody in line, because the threat of war keeps everybody from really freaking out too much. So that's what this is about. These are propaganda rockets, and it is an effort to keep a hold on the society. What you have to understand is that once China kind of got its footing under itself in the 2000s, they started to support North Korea, and it lifted them out of that great famine where you had millions die in North Korea. Nobody really knows how many people died in North Korea at that time, but it was millions, they think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was genocide in the northern part of, basically, Kim Jong-il just cut off the food to the northern part of North Korea. And the money and the resources from China started to flow in and lift them out of poverty. Now, they still go through cycles like any economic cycle does. Even though they're a communist country, economic laws still apply.
Yeah, they just can't escape the flaws of communism.
Right.
They hit it, and they hit them hard.
Yeah.
That's why the black market in North Korea is so strong, they've got like they have to let it go through, because if they don't, people will starve.
Sure,
you know, they under, you know, it's and if they starve, they'll riot. So there's like, well, the black market's bringing cash in. The black market's bringing that in. Just leave them alone, or make them pay off soldiers. This way, the soldiers at least get paid.
Sure. So exactly right. So North Korea is totally dependent on China. Yep. They're the ones that they trade with. Although North Korea will trade with Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, some of the Middle Eastern countries will trade with North Korea. And that's why they always end up on the state-sponsored terror list, is that they do send weapons and other things over to these Middle Eastern countries. Or they just export their raw materials to these Middle Eastern countries, that, which then fashion weapons. And that's how they get on the state-sponsored terror list. It's not because of the rockets totally, it's because of that. So they're never going to act unilaterally, and China is never going to let the Song Dynasty essentially disappear. And the reason is that China can't handle that influx of, there's 25 million people in North Korea. South Korea has 50 million people, and they're kind of out of space.
Right.
And China does not want all those people flooding in a refugee crisis into their economy. Because for all that you hear about China's economy growing, and it certainly is, a lot of the way that they measure their GDP there is based on building, on construction. And that's why they have these entire ghost towns. You know, there's one city outside of Beijing that's like built just like Paris, and nobody lives in it. You know, they've built it across China, all these cities that's equipped for like 5 million people, but 30,000 people live there. So they really aren't as economically strong as everybody lets on.
Correct.
But so they can't handle the instability of a Korean War. And China is never going to let them unilaterally act to fire on the United States. This is all saber rattling on Un's part to keep control of his nation. So I wanted to introduce with this because I think it's really important, because we're about to enter a period with North Korea where you're going to, Harry and I are men of certain ages, and we were alive during the Iraq war lead up.
Yep.
And, you know, I just remember, I mean, I was pro-war because I was 20 and stupid. I didn't know any better. But I remember how I thought and treated people who were anti-war and how society treated them. Like, it's a really and now as a non-interventionist, I know what's coming, and I don't like it, and I'm not looking forward to it, because if you are non-interventionist in a period of war, you are unpatriotic. You're treated like scum.
Crap. Yeah.
I mean, it really sucked. I mean, do you have any memories of that period? Were you political at all during the Iraq lead up?
Yes, I was. But like during that time, let's see, what was that? 03. Let's see, if I remember correctly, I was just out of getting out of high school, so I was in that weird stretch of myself where I was transferring over between like leaving like the, you know, the Democrat way of thinking and moving more over to the Republican side.
Yeah.
So it was more of that. I was really in that cross of like, well, I can see why we're fighting, but you know, but I still, we need to like, so I was kind of like rocking the fence back then.
And then
eventually while 04, I was like, no, we need them. We need to go over there and hit them and bomb them before they come here and bomb us.
Right. How did you become a non-interventionist?
Basically just, you know, if I'm honest, Ron Paul.
It's usually how it happened for me too.
You know, granted, like I've learned all these things about peace, but it was more like, but still, we need to be over there and bomb them. But wait a minute, hold on, let's talk about this stuff.
Right.
let's rewind a lot of the tape and really study about blowback and different stuff like that.
I mean, I spent the weekend watching Vice on HBO, not the news, but the actual series, and everywhere that they go in the Middle East. It doesn't matter where they're at. As they're talking to citizens, it's like, well, we fight because of the Americans are here. Like, at a certain point, it just, like, for the people in the Middle East, it just became, well, they're occupiers. We have to fight them.
Right.
You know, and that is the concept of blowback. And I had never really even considered, in all of my consternation and thought and convulsions over the Iraq War, I never took a moment to sit there and think, like, what about an actual human being in Iraq? Because that's not what you're trained to do. That's not what a good, quote-unquote, patriot does in a time of war. You don't sit there and think about the enemy and humanize them. The whole point is to propagandize them to the point that they're dehumanized. And if you watch any documentary, if you read anything about the North Korean people, you feel a tremendous amount of empathy for them. They're a very moral society. They're very good people that have just some really oppressive, horrible leaders that had some very good breaks to build a society that kept them in power.
Right. And that's all they're doing now. Now, hopefully with the likes of what happened in Zimbabwe, the coup that happened there, hopefully some interaction or some peaceful evolution, like the military would step in, take them out, and, you know, just try to do this peaceful transition of power.
If you've ever read 1984, that is exactly what North Korean society is like. There are so many minders and monitors and surveillance systems set up that it's nearly impossible for that society. And the Kim Jong-un, his family is so wealthy, and they have like 10 mansions around. I mean, they're so wealthy. The amount of gold that they have stockpiled is kind of like Gaddafi in Libya. Now, that didn't do him much good, but it took a regional uprising for a Gaddafi, all these different leaders like in Egypt, to get toppled. You're not going to have a regional thing like that in North Korea. That's why it's so unique. And that's why you really have to remember it is not our problem. It is kind of China's problem to police their own neighborhood. And if we preemptively strike them on the hypothetical that they might do something that they likely will not do, then it becomes our problem like Iraq and Afghanistan. And that is what the huge risk is with North Korea.
Yeah. Nobody wants the 25 million people.
Right.
You know, it'd be okay if, like, I'd say, like, the... Like, I think the one country in the world that could do something with it would be the United States, but the China and Russia would not want, you know, North Korea turning into a U.S. territory.
Right.
They don't want us over there as much as they don't want to deal with it. They don't want us. The United States government. Sorry, I meant to say us. Statism.
Us and the government are two different people. Right.
Anyways, so the state, right, having like a territory or a base right there, smack dab, like not a, you know, so they have to get, you know, since it's a
you just accidentally, Mittens is taking a nap in Harry's bag, and he accidentally just hit her.
Violated her nap.
Yeah, you violated the hell out of my cat's nap.
And then,
in both ways.
Yeah, because you would have to let them have trade routes, so that means China has to be okay with, since it's a military base, to let military boats go right up the peninsula and park. Okay, they're kind of okay because it's South Korea. It's okay, whatever. We get that. But to get that far close, granted, they have no they don't want to like fight a war with the United States. But the last thing you want is a potential enemy to park, you know, like missiles and everything else right next to your border.
Yeah, they don't. They don't want.
They've played Risk.
They don't want regional intrusion. And like, if you look at what's going on in the South China Sea, where China has just claimed the South China Sea for themselves. Against our wishes, against the wishes of Indonesia and every other country in the South Indonesian and the South China Sea, like they just say it's ours, and they've started building these islands and putting people on these islands and fishing, and like they just don't care, because who's going to stop them? It's kind of like Russia and the Ukraine. Who's going to stop them? Nobody stopped Putin. Putin doesn't give a crap about the UN or the United States. Like all these big powers kind of know at this point, America is so over-leveraged militarily and that they're not going to take the risk. Like, Iraq and Afghanistan completely exposed that, yes, you may be the biggest military on paper, but you have so overextended yourself that your people will no longer, they're not geared up to fight a war. They don't want to fight a war. And you're just bleeding cash in places like Afghanistan and in Iraq and these seven other places that we're engaged in.
Yep.
And China is a non-interventionist country. Like, if you really look at China's foreign policy, the way that their foreign policy works is, like, name one country that China occupies? Like, other than, what is it? It's not. It's a Taiwan.
Taiwan, technically.
And Tibet.
Yeah.
But
whoa! They don't occupy Tibet. They have Tibet.
Okay. Right, but. And Tibet...
Trying to get into China one day.
Okay. There's a dispute over Tibet, which is a tiny island. But if you look at America, we're heavily engaged. Now, they still sell arms. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Middle East and you look at Yemen, for instance, Saudi Arabia buys a lot of weapons from China. You know, essentially, the United States is first and foremost in spreading weapons around the world. And Russia and China are right behind them. And you want to sell these weapons because you want to sell the parts, too.
Mm-hmm.
But China doesn't interfere in foreign policy too much, and what they're doing is like they've go look up the stadiums in China, like Chinese stadiums that have been built all across Africa.
So what they do
is they just go build soccer stadiums for like a place like the Congo and the Stadium of the Martyrs or something, which is a very Congo name, but China just invests heavily. And all these countries gives jobs to the people of Africa, builds them stadiums, and then people are like, yeah, we like the Chinese. They don't push us around and tell us what to do, like the IMF and the United States and the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'd much rather have the Chinese help than the Americans help.
Yeah, and Africa, they also take the black women over there and bring them over to China because of the Chinese one-child policies.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, like, men in there with no wives. Like, they was going through that crisis of wife-sharing, and then they're like, wait a minute, we just bring black women from Africa over.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier. Yeah, but you are right, yeah. They went over there, they do economic development, so they get new trade partners, and they realize that, you know, it's... If you build up this country, you know, and you let them trust you because they want you, they'll give you cash.
Uh-huh.
They'll give you money. They'll be your trade partner.
Right.
And then if any other these Middle Eastern countries try to screw you over for trade routes, whatever, I'll just go right through you.
Yep.
Go right through you.
Exactly. So China's not using their military might. They're using their economic might. And look how fast her economy is growing. Yeah. So
And it's crazy. And it's like all – and you talk about a country back in like the 1950s had a massive famine, losing all bunch of people. Communists is all hell and just decided to take the ideas of, I don't know, free market capitalism to just a little extent and just kind of let it go wild and leave it alone.
Yeah. And that's really the model that we ought to be following. I mean, not the communist model, but – not trying to be the world's policeman.
Yeah, not try to be the world's policeman and just let the market do on its own. You know, like because like communist China is still there, but their government understands that if they mess with anything inside those zones, anything with the economic ability, it would dry up overnight.
Yeah.
People would move those businesses out of it. Just kind of like what Coca-Cola did to get it the heck out of Venezuela. It got out quick.
Yeah.
Fast switchover.
I apologize to our video viewers because the board is acting up and I don't have a good plug-in to the Mevo. But for the other thousands of people listening, you're going to hear a press conference and with Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. The second voice you'll hear is Paul Ryan. The third voice you'll hear is Mitch McConnell. The fourth is James Mattis. I don't know that we'll get that far because we're not going to play too much of this. I want you to listen for a couple things. So if you are old enough to remember the invasion of Iraq and the lead up to Iraq, there was this period where everybody knew that America was going to invade Iraq. Like it was a done deal and military action was going to happen. And we were like, you can't mobilize that many soldiers, that much equipment without like tipping people off and calling up the guard and things. So especially in a free country with an open press like ours, but the rhetoric changed at a certain point, and I've started to see the foreign policy team of Donald Trump and Donald Trump himself have that shift. So, you know, and I was reading, I actually just threw it away, Axios. You know, Axios said, you know, at this stage, calling on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons and missile no longer counts as serious diplomacy because they're not doing it.
Yeah.
The Trump administration should make clear what it is willing to offer in exchange for such a freeze, whether sanctions relief, a formal end to the state of war, or an adjustment to the U.S.-South Korean military exercises. Now, let me explain these, because these are actually really smart ideas. So what has happened in the past, Madeleine Albright, when Clinton, you know, after that military buildup in 1994 and starting to be an aggressive state, the Clinton administration struck a deal with Kim Jong-il. And it involved just giving them a bunch of cash and resources and sanction relief. And it calmed them down for a period of years, because what was happening is they needed to get lifted out of that famine.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody on the world stage kind of knew, like, they're just doing this to get money so they don't, like, go under as a regime.
Mm-hmm.
And so Madeleine Albright went and actually visited Kim Jong-il, and they struck a deal with them that included a lot of these things. And they stopped creating nuclear weapons for a period of time, which this North Korean deal is kind of like what a lot of the criticisms over the Iran deal. Like, look at North Korea. They kept building nuclear weapons and ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles. So this is way too rational
mm-hmm.
for the Trump administration. Like, Rex Tillerson could figure this out, but I don't think Donald will. The Trump administration should, what is it going to give them, essentially, to calm down? Like a tantruming child, what are you going to give them? A formal end to the state of war. We're technically still at war with them. We just have a ceasefire on the 1954 North Korean-South Korean War, the Korean War, and or an adjustment to the U.S.-South Korean military exercises. We do a tremendous amount of military exercises in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing them to Russia, to China, to, you know, to Iran, Iraq, and ISIS. We have active military there, but. We do these military exercises, and what it does is it just freaks North Korea out.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Putin goes, okay, yeah, you're doing military exercises. Watch this.
I'll put
76,000 troops on you know, the border of Poland and do a military exercise, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
And
or just get a sub to go like, so where's international waters end here?
Exactly,
real quick.
Exactly right. And so, but North Korea doesn't have that sophistication, and you should not underestimate Kim Jong-un. He was educated in Switzerland. He speaks multiple languages. He is not a dumb person by any stretch of the imagination. He is not an irrational actor. He's not a crazy person. He's a despot who is trying to hold on to power. And he's not like Paris Hilton, where they ruin the third generation. He's the youngest of the three sons, and he was chosen.
That's alive.
That's alive. The other two somehow are dead.
Strange.
But he was chosen because he was the brightest. And so he's not a dumb person. He can be reasoned with. The guy just wants to stay in power. And so there's the moral cost there that every person listening has to, like, figure out for themselves. Okay, so if you study, if you read the great book by, you know, What is that book that I just raved about? Barbara, Nothing to Envy. It was a great book. And it was about the life of North Koreans over the past 50 years. You see how much suffering there is. And enabling him to stay in power, all that does is keeps him in power and keeps another 10 to 20 years of quote-unquote peace.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're kind of extending it, hoping that he fails and you have a failed state, and then he picks it back up. But that extends the misery of the North Korean people.
Yeah.
But the reality is that if you militarily attack them, look at Iraq. Do you think that the biggest problem with Iraq and Afghanistan, the reason that we will never have quote unquote victory in those locations, is because they feel completely betrayed by America, mm-hmm. by the American government. Like, in Afghanistan, you sit there and you hear about all the schools that we've built and all the progress that has been made for women and blah, blah, blah. Well, like, the average Afghan just thinks, like, well, you heard in a couple episodes ago where George was basically saying, I was willing to sit and barter, but the majority of my colleagues, my fellow soldiers, were not. And the faces of every Afghan fell when we would walk out of every room like that. And that's been going on for almost 20 years now. So you have it, and you've completely let opium come back.
Mm-hmm.
So opium now, you know, opium, heroin, basically,
yeah.
makes up 60% of Afghanistan's economy. It's mm-hmm. it's the world's first true narco state, and it's our fault. And you have to wonder how much of that contributes to our own opioid problem. So... doing something militarily does not necessarily mean that there's going to be humanitarian relief for the North Koreans, mm-hmm. you know, and you have a population of people who are not like a fourth generation of, it's not like Egypt where you have this huge group of young people who are ready to fight, who are young and hungry. Like, the majority of the young people in North Korea are massively deformed or deficient because of growing up in a starvation state.
Right, yeah. They're hungry, but for different reasons.
Exactly right.
They're hungry for food.
Exactly. So they were eating sawdust and bark. They literally would kill pine trees because they would eat the bark off the trees.
Oof.
I mean, that's a level of hunger you can't imagine.
Yeah.
So it's... And it just shows you the failure of communism. I mean, it's truly a tragic tale, but they're short of... There's just not really a good solution. And that's sometimes the problem with being a non-interventionist. There isn't really a good solution. You know, I can't sit here and say, like, here's what we ought to do. We should give them a bunch of American money. Well, I don't like that as a taxpayer.
Right.
And I don't like the morality of extending their misery.
Correct.
But I certainly don't like the option of sending American troops to South Korea to invade another country mm-hmm. and inherit another 40-year quagmire.
Correct.
So there really isn't a great solution here.
Yeah. But there's got to be, like, all right, with Trump spending so much time over in China, that had to be on the table. There had to be a discussion for it.
Sure.
Okay, and watching the coup that happened in Zimbabwe and understanding, like I said, that, you know, it comes to a time that, you know, you may just need to topple the dictator over with somebody else. Just like you said, that whole regional thing, that might be the way to do it. Now, sending in tax money sucks, sending in money that you've stolen from other people to pay off different warlords, but, you know, you get warlord fighting warlord, and then, you know, coming in from the chaos.
You know what really truly changes it? It's culture.
Yeah.
If you look at Cuba, their young people love America and have a spirit of freedom and have been able over the last 20 years to change their government because of American hip hop. They were able to pick up the radio signals from Miami radio stations, and there's a huge hip hop culture there now. In the fall of the Soviet Union, it was blue jeans. It was Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul and Margaret Thatcher, and the government always takes credit for that. But more than anything, it was the fact that they started to get information seeping in, mm-hmm. and they were like, they have blue jeans? Look how good this looks. I want those. You know, and it was their desire for Western culture that, you know, I read this story one time about this guy who brought a Coca-Cola back from somewhere, and like the whole family got to have like a little taste of the Coca-Cola, like 20 family members having this they're just like, this is amazing.
Well, like, it's like people in North Korea, usually like certain class members, like who are super loyal or the richer,
right,
in North Korea, they do get to spend time and actually bus down to South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
They do it once a year to see family members.
Yeah.
And they get bus back. So they see all this different stuff, but the only people they get to like really break that open is people who are super loyal or, you know, get paid or have the money to get out.
Completely. Yeah, there's a TV show in South Korea. So a huge problem is that these North Koreans go to South Korea and they're treated like pariahs. And so a lot of defectors end up like, why did I leave for South Korea? Like, because in North Korea, things make sense and everything is kind of structured.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's very, like, it's like 1950s and you could date someone for 10 years before kissing them. And then you go to South Korea and it's just like sex soaked. And so, like, to a people who, like, they're like Mormons. Like, I guess the best way, when I say a moral people, the way that most North Koreans live is kind of in the vein of how Mormons are. You know, just that very, like nice, community-oriented, family-oriented, polite society. And then, you know, and then they go to, it's like Orgasmo with Matt and Trey Park, or, you know, like Matt and Trey from South Park, that movie they did where, like, the missionary goes to L.A. and, like, ends up in porno movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what happens in South Korea. They just go, what is this madness? Capitalism is gross. Kim Jong-un was right. How do I go back without getting killed? And so a South Korean TV producer said, you know what, we should try something to normalize them. And so they started this reality TV show that essentially just shows off the talents of mm-hmm. North Koreans. A lot of them are women because it's mostly women that defect. and you know, they're all beautiful. And so, like, people started to see, like, the human side of North Koreans. And this TV show has been put on hard drives and smuggled into North Korea. And that is, like, rapidly changing. Because, like, the rumor had always kind of gotten back, like, it's not better here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to China. There's no jobs. You're just, what happens when you defect to China is you get sold into marriage to a man. And then if you get to South Korea, it's, there's no job. Like, there's no economic opportunity. But now this show is not only changing South Koreans' minds about North Koreans, and they're getting more opportunities because of it. It's sort of like the way that Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I think, normalized for most Americans. Like, for me, I'd never really seen or interacted with a gay person, but I, like, really liked the Queer Eye guys. Okay. Like, I wanted to be on that show. So, like, it really kind of normalized that and made me go, oh, okay, these guys are cool.
You could have used it. You'd have been growing your beard longer.
Oh, yeah. Way longer. Yeah. And so this, but the show's also getting smuggled into North Korea, and North Koreans are going, oh, wow, they don't, maybe those stories aren't bad. Like, maybe those stories aren't totally true. They are treating us well. Because look at these North Koreans getting respect on South Korean TV. So, so culture can change this stuff. Economics can change things. Military options never change it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the greatest example. There's a book by Scott Horton called Fool's Errand about Afghanistan, and it just really documents the last 20 years in Afghanistan, where we're at. And I've not read it yet, but I've read about it a bunch, and I really like Scott Horton a lot. He has a great podcast.
Mm-hmm. Just great interviews.
Great interviews. And I highly recommend going and checking Scott out.
And he writes for antiwar.com?
Antiwar.com, and he's starting to get the... He's been around forever, but he's finally starting to get, like, onto places like Dave Smith, and hopefully he gets on, like, Joe Rogan, and gets gets the recognition that Scott Horton deserves, because forever he's been that lone, like, non-interventionist voice really out there, like, putting good information out. So, but I hear nothing but good things about that book, so I'm going to read it. I definitely want to do that. But but he's somebody I trust that I can recommend the book without having read it, because I know Scott's substance. So if you lived through the 9/11 period, you probably are familiar with war rhetoric. And there's two things in this press conference that I think are really telling. First off, so here's the setting. Chuck and Nancy were supposed to come over with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, and they were going to meet with Donald Trump, and they were going to have a conversation about all kinds of different issues. They were going to talk about the tax plan. They were going to talk about the omnibus spending, because the government maybe may get shut down in December, so they're trying to figure out how to get a continuing resolution to fund the government past December. And Nancy and Chuck decided not to show up. So Trump left their chairs on either side of him. They canceled the press briefing, and they held a press conference with the president sitting in front, in between two empty chairs with their nameplates, and which is great optics. And then Paul Ryan was there, Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, was there. Paul Ryan's the House Speaker, and then James Mattis was there, who is the Defense Secretary, who presumably came over to talk about that. But what you will hear are two things. First, you will hear how absolutely incoherent Donald Trump is becoming, and it's worrisome. So I say that knowing full well that Donald Trump has always kind of been incoherent, but it's to a level where it's almost concerning how he sounds. Like, it's starting to make me concerned for his health. And then second is Paul Ryan invoking soldiers in their time of need regarding the North Korea situation. When they start to use the empathy card for soldiers, that's when you know that some shit's about to go down. Because the way that the way that you're a good patriot or a bad patriot is if you support our troops.
Mm-hmm.
It's never about the policy. It's about, do you support the troops or not? It's not about Colin Kaepernick's point. It's about, do you support the troops or not?
Yeah.
And you saw with that NFL kneeling thing, Donald Trump used that "do you support the troops" narrative to completely turn half of your Facebook friends into slobbering zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's that phrase of that question. It's like when people talk about, like, well, the survey questions are inaccurate. They're loaded, and that's what it is. It's a loaded survey question.
Exactly. It's wrapped in emotion because everybody knows a soldier.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Thank you very much. As you probably have heard, and some of you have reported, a missile was launched a little while ago from North Korea. I will only tell you that we will take care of it. We have General Mattis in the room with us, and we've had a long discussion on it. It is a situation that we will handle. With that being said, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi did not...
Also odd because he's normally much more... He pokes, but that may not have been what he wanted to. He's very smart and selective in where he pokes, like the tweet basically where he's like, I don't ever call him short and fat. Like, he knows that's going to get press.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is a reserved Trump. Which, whenever Trump's quiet and reserved, I get worried.
Not show up for our meeting today. I'm not really that surprised. We have a lot of differences. They're weak on crime. They're weak on...
Weak on crime is what's called dog whistle politics. And weak on crime is one of those things that you will hear Donald Trump say repeatedly, especially about Doug Jones in Alabama. Because to millennials like us, when we hear weak on crime, we hear he's not good with crime.
Mm-hmm.
When baby boomers, white baby boomers, especially in Alabama, hear weak on crime, what they hear is black men are coming to rape your white daughters. So that's what that it's actually a very strategic choice of words that Donald Trump uses. And it's like how everybody bashed Barack Obama for using "yes, we can." It's very propagandist.
Mm-hmm.
And this war on crime that he's just using it all the time now.
Illegal immigration. They want the illegal folks to come pouring into our border, and a lot of problems are being caused, although we've stopped it to a large extent, as much as you can without the wall, which we're going to get. They, before this meeting and before this missile launch, they've been weak on military in terms of spending. They're very hard to get. For military, they want it for a lot of other things, but the military is always secondary to them. The military, to me, is number one. We won't be here without our powerful military, and we're building it up stronger, bigger, better than ever before, and General Mattis can testify to that. And the other thing, they want tax increases, and we want major tax decreases.
Which is not true, because not one Democrat currently is arguing for tax increases. So that's a very strategic propagandist point, again, that Donald Trump is putting out there, that you will start seeing repeated over and over and over from your right Facebook friends, that Democrats want tax increases because they're not supporting the tax bill.
Correct.
That's not true. That's not what is on the table. It's like net neutrality, where you're arguing hypotheticals.
Yeah, and if they try to come out against it, since they don't have a bill to introduce, like, well, you don't have a bill, and you're
right.
Voting against the tax decrease, so you want increase.
Right.
Yeah, you can't, you know, it's a no-win.
Right. So, and in all of this, Donald Trump is not, like, what you have to realize about Donald Trump is he's not our president.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is the president for his people. And in some ways, I respect that because he's not lying to us like Barack Obama. Like, where Barack Obama was president for his people, not like Harry's people, but like leftists,
mm-hmm.
where Donald Trump just doesn't give a crap about anybody other than his base. And he plays to them. And at least he's somewhat authentic. He's inadvertently authentic in that way. But that's what something like this, they're weak on crime, they're weak on immigration, they hate the military, they want to raise taxes. Like,
and we're going to get the wall.
He just doesn't care what a libertarian or what a liberal or mm-hmm. what a moderate or even a conservative thinks. He cares about his base and growing that base of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he uses emotional issues to kind of and brings it out and repeats it over and over and over to kind of get a desired effect. So let's go back to the president.
So they decided not to show up. They've been all talk and they've been no action. And now it's even worse. Now it's not even talk. so they're not showing up for the meeting. I will say this, in light of the missile launch, probably they'll be here fairly quickly, or at least discussions will start taking place fairly quickly. I think that we're in a very good position in terms of the meeting we just had over at the Capitol with the Republican senators. It was outstanding. I think we have tremendous support. I was just informed by Mitch that we had a unanimous vote from the Republican side, at least. We had a unanimous vote on the tax bill, and it goes now the next step, and I think we're going to get it passed. I think it's going to pass, and it's going to be very popular. It's going to have lots of adjustments before it ends.
Senate, I think it was the Finance Committee, passed the tax bill. It was a party-line vote. Now it goes to the full Senate.
But the end result would be a very, very massive, the largest in the history of our country, tax cut. And lots of good things are going to happen, including the bringing back to our country of, it probably will end up being over $4 trillion money offshore that's stagnant, that companies and they're just not able to bring it back. So I think it's going to be a number over $4 trillion. Corporate will be able to compete now against the world. If you look at China, if you look at so many other countries, you look at many of the countries, China's at 15%. They're lower than us. We're getting it down to a level that is either going to be lower or right in the ballpark so that we can compete much better with our companies, our great, great companies. And that means jobs, and it means lots of other things. I'm very happy to see that the consumer confidence level is just about the highest it's ever been. In fact, I don't want to make any mistakes in front of the press because you'll get me on it, but to the best of my knowledge, it's the highest it's ever been. Consumer confidence has been setting records. They have confidence in the people leading.
Now, that is true, and that is a true point. And yesterday was a record-setting, like a $6 billion day for Cyber Monday. It was one of the better Black Fridays in a long time, so that is good.
Yeah, 'cause
their country.
What'd you say?
Oh, because they were going down. We had trended down. They've been trending down the last few years.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will say that I think it's going to go better and better. And I do believe that this vote on taxes, which are really tax cuts and reform, is going to be very, very important. So we had a good day today. We had a phenomenal meeting with the Republican senators. We had it was very special, that meeting. In many respects, I wish you could have been inside that room. It was very, very special, the camaraderie. It was somewhat of a love fest. They want to see it happen. They want to see it happen, not only for the Republican Party. I think much more importantly, they want to see it happen for the country, because they know how important it is for us to compete and win. And with that, I maybe we'll start with Paul Ryan to say a few words about where we stand with different things, and then I'll ask Mitch McConnell.
Okay. I'll just briefly say I think it's regrettable that our Democratic colleagues and leadership chose not to join us today. For a bill to become a law, Congress has to pass a bill and the President signs a bill. That means Congress and the White House always negotiate legislation. We have important work to do. We have big deadlines to meet. We have a military in need of our support, and that work needs to happen now. And I just think it's very regrettable that our Democratic colleagues and leadership chose to not participate, because we have to negotiate these bills to get this work done for the people we represent, and especially to help our military with these difficult situations we have. And I just hope that our friends in leadership on the other side of the aisle will choose to participate so we can get people's work done.
Yeah, so to me, the Paul Ryan was when I went,
Two things. One, those chairs look comfy. See, those are comfy chairs.
Those are the kind of chairs we need in the studio.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Second thing is, you see Paul Ryan's tie?
That tie was nice.
Is that a Kekistan tie?
It was the color of the Kekistan flag. It was white and green and beautiful. do you agree with me that he sounded a little feeble there? He sounded a little dotarded.
Little, because he was so reserved. Did it like seem like he was trying to like stick to a script that he had going on in his head instead of just going on what pops in there usually?
Right. Like yesterday.
Like, you know, when he usually does, you know, adjective salad or this, yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I listening to it, and then this moment yesterday, it's He's talking to the last of the Navajo code talkers, and these guys helped win the war because they talked in Navajo, and it was a language that the Germans and the Russians couldn't, you know, they didn't know what Navajo was. And so he was there honoring the Navajo wind talkers. And he clearly just doesn't know who he's talking to. Like, he's just kind of lost in his day and isn't really sure what's going on. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at some Native Americans, and he, like, just the first thing that pops into his head, let's come out. And so, secondly, they had the press conference honoring the Navajo wind talkers in front of a portrait of Andrew Jackson, who basically, if you don't know, Andrew Jackson was a genocidal maniac towards Indians. He hated Native Americans, and he killed 10,000 of them on the Trail of Tears.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Like, he's the one who moved them all from the southern United States over to Oklahoma. Like, mm-hmm. he's hated. As he's the there's a reason he's coming off the $20 bill and Harriet Tubman's going on. It's because it's like you just can't have someone who is such a virulent genocidal maniac on your money.
I get that, but like him being on the $20 bill is almost like, ha ha, you're on the fiat note. Ha ha ha.
I know what it is because he tried to end in the central bank at that time.
And twice. Now I'm like, oh, you're on it now.
Right. And, well, it's because he's credited with helping found the Democratic Party with the mm-hmm. Jefferson Jackson Day dinners. That's why he was on there, but still.
And yeah, So every time, so that's why I said, like, the biggest, like, lie you could get onto is ever from the Democratic Party is going on the website, like, we have supported civil rights for 200 years. Really?
So it really is just, this is, like, I'm just at a point with Trump where I don't even, like, you can't, when people say they're outraged, I just think they're full of crap. Like, I just don't think that outrage is an actual emotion. Like, Harry, you know me, I have every emotion known to the human being in every single day, right?
You have 55 shades of triggered.
Right. I've never been outraged in my life. I can't think of a time I've ever been outraged. So when people get outraged by Trump after 20 months of Trump, mm-hmm. I just go, this is what he does.
Yeah.
Like, this is just, at some point, you just have to either roll your eyes and go, this guy, mm-hmm. or laugh, which I just was like, what is he doing? What is he, like, your drunk uncle?
Yeah. Really, he just needs to hire somebody to do the talking for him. He just whispers in someone's ear, right. And they just like, I'm going to clean that up for you.
Yeah. I think the shuffling is coming soon. God forbid Donald Trump die in office, because we do not need the Kennedy-Lincoln effect with Donald Trump and this becoming. It would be cemented into
Trumpsonian era.
Like the Trump ideology and the Trump politics would be just cemented into our American politics. It would be such a disaster. So pray for Donald Trump's health.
I just can't wait till the next election cycle when so many other people try to copy the same, like, the playbook.
Right.
When everyone's like, okay, I've got to do it. I've been hitting with memes. You know,
right.
Give me 15 high schoolers, a bunch of Four Loko. You can't give Four Loko to high school students. We're giving Four Loko to high school students, okay?
Exactly.
I want memes.
So this is what the President of the United States said to a group of Native American heroes as they were being honored at the White House in front of an Andrew Jackson picture.
Special people. You were here long before any of us were here.
White privilege.
Although we have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you because you are special.
Like what? What? It's just clear to me, like, he didn't have prepared remarks and didn't. He doesn't know who the Navajo wind talker. He never saw the movie. Like,
you don't know that he probably showed it. I saw the movie. He just got the cliff notes and the walk over here.
That's how Trump's foreign policy, military policy. It's all done by movies that he saw in the 1950s, like Tora.
1950s.
1960s. Like, to him, Patton is like his version of Sun Tzu. Like, that's how he forms foreign policy, is his old war movies. How would John Ford handle the North Korean crisis? That's how he designs policy. Are you okay?
No.
Take your let the laughter be heard. Harry's crying.
I can't. That's just
it is. Patton is, that's why, like, Jim Mattis, is Jim Mattis not Patton? He is the closest thing to American Patton, like the modern Patton that we have.
So, okay, I'm good. I'm back.
So here's this Pocahontas thing. You probably heard it. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard him say it a few times. So in March of 2016, she criticized him on Twitter. She's got about as much Indian blood as I have. Her whole life was based on a fraud. She got into Harvard and all that because she was a minority. June 2016 on Twitter, Crooked Hillary is wheeling out one of the least productive senators in the U.S. Senate, Goofy Elizabeth Warren, who lied on Heritage. June 2016 at a campaign rally in Virginia. Pocahontas is not happy. She's not happy. She's the worst, you know, Pocahontas. I'm doing such a disservice to Pocahontas. It's so unfair to Pocahontas, but this Elizabeth Warren, I call her Goofy. Elizabeth Warren, she's one of the worst senators in the U.S. Senate. And you know, Republicans were outraged because this was the early days of Trump where we were like, oh, this guy's starting to win. We need to deal with him. And so here's the background on the Pocahontas thing. So in 96, Harvard Law School touted Elizabeth Warren, then a professor at the university, as being Native American in a letter responding to criticism of the school's lack of minority women. Apparently, she checked the Native American box. The rumor is that she checked the Native American box when she applied at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens. Like, I worked at a radio station where they put me down as Native American because I told them I was 1/16 Cherokee and Choctaw. And so they put me down as Native American for the EEO file, for the Equal Opportunity Employment Act. So I'm like Elizabeth Warren, too, basically. But, like, so then in 2012 when ran against Scott Brown, who was the Republican that miraculously beat, that took over for Ted Kennedy. Yeah.
Are you saying, like, you and Abdul were token EEOC hires?
100%.
Damn it.
No, 100%. So the former GOP senator that Warren unseated, and Scott Brown is the current ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa, which is a cushy gig. Mm-hmm. Like, if I were going to be, if I had a job, it'd be the U.S. ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. Like, you wouldn't have to work. Everything could be paid for you, and you'd be in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. He used Warren's self-proclaimed Native American heritage to question her integrity. In 2016, Brown also said Warren should take a DNA test if she wants to prove her heritage.
23andMe it.
Warren defended her claims, telling NPR in 2012 that while growing up in Oklahoma, her family always told her she's part Cherokee. These are my family stories. This is our lives, and I'm very proud of it. That's how she talks. She has a very weird way of talking. However, she said she didn't have documentation to prove it. Fact checkers attempted to trace her ancestry, but after several failed attempts, the consensus was that there is no documented evidence to support she is of Native American heritage. Experts have also noted that any such evidence is difficult to prove to begin with, and the Cherokee Nation has looked into it, and they have, they do not think that she's Cherokee.
Until they need her to be.
Right. So Trump just picked up on it and started calling her Pocahontas.
Yeah. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Defend it. Defend it or fight it or come out against it. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, you have to, in order to shut Trump down, you've got to shut it down like you either troll. Don't play the game. Shut his game down.
That's really the way to handle Trump. And it's the way to handle any troll. Yeah. You just stop paying attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like being outraged at Donald Trump, like, listen, I think he's immoral, he's unethical, mm-hmm. like, his hotel in Dubai was built with slave labor, he underpays his workers, he paid off every construction company in New York, he was in bed with the mob, like...
It's everyone in New York, though.
I know.
And Chicago.
I know, but I'm saying, like, the guy isn't, like, some profound moral leader, and he has become that to a certain voting segment of our population because the people that they hate are constantly bitching about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so people like me who I don't have anything. And like Donald Trump, like I think some of the justice, like Neil Gorsuch was a win. The appointment of Federal Society judges to the bench is going to be good for the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The deregulation has been very good. Like, so there's some things that I think that he's done well, But by and large, I also think this tricky. So basically, the way that they have a way of killing something in government. If you pass a law that the other party passes a law and you don't like it, you can just choose not to fund it. So even if a bill gets passed into law, this happens at the local, state, and federal level, you can just choose. It's called an unfunded, you know, it's just like it's not funded.
Yeah.
So effectively, the law never gets implemented because it never gets money. Mm-hmm. What Trump is effectively doing is he is not staffing the federal government. And so he's just kind of, with labor, he's defunding the government labor-wise. So he's just not hiring people. And he's putting in hiring freezes and everything. So it's some of that stuff. I think from a libertarian perspective, that's good because that's a de-escalation of the growth of government that we saw mm-hmm. under Donald Trump or Barack Obama. But
so you'll eventually be able to say the growth of government under Donald Trump,
right? No, for sure. But he's not the great libertarian hope. Like he's ethically, morally grotesque. He's not a good representative. I think that the effect on politics has been awful. I mean, you can't talk politics on. You never really could talk politics on social media, but people are so stupid at a level that I've never witnessed before. Yeah. Like, you go look at our Facebook page and like trying to have a reasonable discussion with some of these people on net neutrality. Like, you can say, please. Do not comment until you actually listen to this, because Ajit Pai was on Matt Lewis, his podcast. Mm-hmm. He was also with the Reason folks or the Fifth Column, one of the two. It's the same thing. And like I learned a lot, and I was like, this people need to hear this. Like, this is the other side that you're not hearing, mm-hmm. and it's pretty convincing. And it's just like, this page hates liberty. How could you call yourselves libertarians? Like, you can't have a reasonable discussion on Facebook. Like, it's just, and Trump has kind of killed that, you know, and it sucks, but
yeah,
it's top keck though, bruh.
Top keck, yeah. And that's the other thing is like, this is liberty. Is like you know, we try to say, is like, there's many paths to liberty, okay? And
right,
especially when it comes to net neutrality, dude, there's, you're screwed either way.
Let's save it because we're going to talk about that after this next subject.
Okay. All right. I'll wait. I'll fire it. Put it back in the chamber.
Yes, because talking about Elizabeth Warren, I've gotten several requests to talk about, even before today, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the mm-hmm. CFPB. So this is an interesting story. So let's talk about what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was. Okay, this bureau, you know, you have like these protection, you have these regulatory agencies for things like toasters. Mm-hmm. And so a Harvard professor named Elizabeth Warren wrote a paper where she's basically like, you're going to regulate a $30 toaster, but nobody regulates financial products. Like, nobody regulates student loans or payday lenders or mortgages or any of this stuff. Like, credit unions, who's actually out? Like, what is the agency that if you have a problem, you can go to that agency and they can deal with this issue? And so she the year before the financial collapse in 2007 published this paper talking about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And if you remember, the Dodd-Frank bill was passed in the wake of the reforms, mm-hmm. and Barney Frank is from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
He's from Boston. And so he knew Elizabeth Warren, he had run into her, he had read this paper, he liked the idea, and so he put it into the Dodd-Frank bill. And the creation was authorized by the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, whose passage in 2010 was a legislative response to the financial crisis and the subsequent Great Recession. It was established as an independent agency, but the status is being reviewed by the U.S. Court of Appeals. So this is from Wikipedia, by the way. According to former director Richard Cordray, I keep thinking it's Rob Cordray from the Jon Stewart days of the good days of mm-hmm. The Daily Show.
Good days.
I'm sorry about the coughing, guys. The Bureau's priorities are mortgages, credit cards, and student loans. It was designed to consolidate its employees and responsibilities from a number of other federal regulatory bodies, including the Federal Reserve, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, and the National Credit Union Administration, even the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. The Bureau is an independent unit located inside and funded by the U.S. Federal Reserve with an interim affiliation with the U.S. Treasury Department. So that's part of its independence, is that it's not funded by politicians. It's funded by the Fed through overages of $20 trillion in debt, and we have overages at the Fed, I guess. So it writes and enforces rules for financial institutions. And it examines both bank and non-bank institutions, monitors, and reports on markets. You can basically write them and say, I think I'm being ripped off by this person, and they will look into it for you. And, you know, one of the criticisms is that, like, Wells Fargo, people started writing in about the Wells Fargo scandal where, you know, basically employees were writing in and saying, there's an account open in my name, what's going on? Turned out that, like, this was this massive fraud scandal inside Wells Fargo, and they didn't do anything about it. But we'll get more onto that later. So since the database was established in 2011, more than 7,300 complaints have been published. CFPB detractors argue that it is a gotcha game. There's already a database maintained by the FTC, although that information is not available to the public. And the issue of who leads the CFPB has been in contention from the beginning. So originally, Barack Obama had hired, by this point, by 2011, had hired Elizabeth Warren to work in the Treasury Department as a special advisor to the president. And she was kind of the de facto head of this agency before it really was implemented. But it was clear that Elizabeth Warren was not going to get confirmed by the Senate. That will come into play here. So, because the head of this agency is an executive agency, even though it is outside of the scope of Congress in some ways, it is still, you have to have the Senate approve whoever the appointment is. And this has been kind of an extra constitutional agency. And this has been the argument that Republicans have made from the very beginning, that there are things within this organization that aren't constitutional. That you can't just appoint, you can't create this agency that doesn't have oversight by Congress, that then has the ability to form regulations and punish American companies.
Right.
Like, there has to be some, you can't have a federal agency that isn't accountable to the president or to Congress. And the argument from the other side is, yes, there are oversights, like, for instance, the New York Times, which Adam Liptak is the New York Times, has been the reporter on this, and man, has he been in the tank for this. And I'll kind of point out the bias in some of his reporting. You know, still the agencies, this is from, is the Consumer Bureau unaccountable and ineffective? The New York Times writes, still the agency's financial independence from Congress is not the same as no oversight at all. Congress holds the Consumer Bureau accountable in several ways, as outlined by the Consumer Federation of America. Its director must be confirmed by the Senate and is required to testify to the House and Senate committee twice a year. Big frickin' whoop. Each year, that's the editor's note. It's not in the New York Times. Each year, the Consumer Bureau is asked to submit reports to Congress and undergo an audit from the Government Accountability Office, an investigative agency in the legislative branch that has no power. The GAO has a podcast, and it's always funny because they're like, we've discovered this corruption. And I'm like, nobody cares. So it is an extra constitutional body. So it also, like, the publication of the complaints on a public website, you could argue is not necessarily fair, because it's kind of like the same thing where it's like, if you're a business and you're a payday loan person and you're dealing with a certain population, and listen, I go to the pawn shop all the time. When I need an extra $200, I take something to the pawn shop, because, man, that's cheap, easy cash. I always get it out.
It's awful.
of course. But I'm bad with money. But no, like something like the pawn shop. I've been in the pawn shop, okay? I'm just saying I'm down with my people. White trash, all right?
Yeah, I see that.
Right.
Yeah.
And the disdain in your voice that you just... You should have seen the look on his face. His pinky curled up. His Perrier water, which isn't a koozie, so people don't realize it's Kroger brand, not Perrier. So I'll not have you judging me.
I'm just saying, I was like, that's an awful way to
It's help. Very dumb.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But sometimes if you need an extra 200, it's better than going out and taking a real loan.
Well, you know, you could probably just go down to like a truck stop. You could probably make that 200 real quick.
With my mouth?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm a lady, sir. I'm a lady. But, so, go ahead.
When you're working with the dredges of society, everyone out there that works with the general public knows that these people call in for about anything. So, like, if you work, let's say, retail at a gas station, people call on you just because they don't like you. Or
right.
Just tired of your stuff, or you won't let them have a free drink that day.
Right. So... Yeah, and so to publish it just outright and on a federal government's website, some argue is it's undue influence. It's giving credibility to internet comments.
Yeah, making Yelp federal.
Right.
It's a federal Yelp page.
Exactly. So I'm going to give you two sides on the CFPB.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you the New York Times side, and then I'm going to give you the National Review side. Because there's a writer named Ronald Rubin who has written some really good stuff, and Andrew McCarthy's a bright guy, that on economic stuff we would often agree with the National Review as libertarians. So this is, like, you will realize, so there's never been a moment in history where I've seen people, at least in the last 100 years, distrust the press as much as they do right now. To the point that they're willing to bet on sending a child molester to the Senate? Because, like, 10 years ago, child molesting, we're not cool with that. You got to go to jail. Like, we're putting Jared in jail, but we'll put more in the Senate. Like, it's fine, because we just distrust the Washington Post so much that we got to send this guy to the Senate.
Well, they actually have physical hardcore proof with Jared and... Yeah. The other news
Let's take a look at Roy's hard drives. Let's see what kind of U-porn he's hitting up. YouTube just got rid of like 65,000 YouTube accounts because they were, you know, up to no good on
60,000 accounts. It was like 150,000 videos.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
And I am just guessing that, you know, probably, never mind. And like the Washington Post, if you actually go read, for the love of God, go read the story from the Washington Post about Project Veritas instead of just seeing whatever your friends share. I've got it printed out. We're not going to do it because we were already way over time, like usual.
It's like 9:30.
I know. But
gotta go.
Am I bothering you?
No, I'm just saying.
So... Go read it. And there were 9 women that the Washington Post could have printed their names. They printed 4. So they did their journalistic duty. They're just, like, if you believe Roy Moore, you're wrong. Like, there's just no planet in which you could believe Roy Moore at this point. Like, you can sit there and say, like, you can be intellectually honest and say, yeah, he probably did that 40 years ago, but I don't want a Democrat in the Senate. And you can make that argument, but, like, you can't at this point really look into the Roy Moore situation and go, I don't believe the women. Like, I don't see how you can intellectually get there.
Well, then someone will say, like, well, the Democrats pro-choice, and, you know, so that's killing babies.
But
so I'm going to pick the lesser of two evils.
Picking the lesser of two evils is at least an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just saying I don't believe the press is not a valid argument.
Correct,
to me.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing is, like, they have the ability to, one, write in a Libertarian. If you really don't want a Democrat to it, you can write in a Libertarian.
Yep.
Yeah. Or you can write in another Republican.
I think his name's Ron Bishop.
You're saying the Libertarian.
The Libertarian,
good,
yeah.
Good.
Doug Jones is the Democrat.
Yeah, that's good.
But, no, I mean, to me, I wouldn't be voting for Roy Moore or Doug Jones anyways. But, you know, I think if you actually use your brain and use critical thinking instead of engaging in pointless Facebook fights.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see how you can, like, look at any of this Roy Moore stuff and not go, yeah, this guy was a freaking creep.
Yeah, and if anything, you can look at stuff like this and understand that why there needs to be more choices on ballots and better ballot access for other political parties. Because you could get stuck with... this freaking Discord. You could get stuck with just someone on the ballot just because, like, well, these are the ballot access rules.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you know, what if something, if they find something about the Democrats? So you've got, let's say, like, someone like a Hart, you know, they're both, let's say they're both pedos. You know,
right.
I'm not saying the other one is. I'm just a hypothetical election.
Right.
But since, because the ballot's the way it is, well, you can pick for pedo B or pedo A.
Right.
You know?
It's like, and the people who try to make the moral equivalency of Al Franken to, like, like the whataboutism of, well, what about Al Franken? Well, what about Al Franken? Like, he's wrong too. Like like, what about Al Franken or what about Conyers? That isn't an argument for Roy Moore. Like,
right.
that's a logical fallacy called tu quoco. Is that what it is?
How dare you?
You know your logical fallacies.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, yeah.
It's just Google whataboutism and you'll find it. But I mean, it's a logical fallacy to say it's that just that kindergarten thinking.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like that's fine, and this is, and if the Democrats are dealing with that, and that's dealing with that desk cam, but we're talking
right.
about that's irrelevant at this point. We're talking about this one cam. Your evidence that you're bringing up is irrelevant,
right? Yeah. Like, I'm just at the point where, like, if I post about Roy Moore and you bring up Al Franken. I just have to block you at this point.
Because,
like, you're too stupid to be my Facebook friend.
Mm-hmm. Dolphin swim.
Right. Okay.
Why'd you bring that up? Why'd you bring up Al Franken?
Right.
I was like, because we'll start another thread over here about Al Franken. We'll talk about that over there. But over here, right here, we'll talk about this.
I'm a libertarian. I don't like the left or the right.
Yep.
I'm different.
Yeah.
So, anyways. So, the New York Times, battle for control of consumers agency heads to court. So the part about this that I missed that I should have read that's really important is basically that forget the facts. I can remember.
There you go.
Basically, in 2012, they wouldn't give a hearing to Rob Corddry, and they kept because the Republicans were like, this is not a constitutional agency. We're not going to implement this. And there was a Republican Senate, and they just would not. They filibustered the actual hearing, and they just said no. We're not even going to entertain your choice. And so during a recess, he did a recess appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did a recess appointment at the same time to basically, it's like, a you know, back when the Constitution was written and they were gone for 6 months, the president was given the power of the recess appointment, which, you know, Congress won't be back for 6 months. We need a postmaster general.
Right.
And the federal government was the size of, you know, you could fit it in my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the recess appointment was for. The recess appointment now is not to be used to appoint the head of a major federal agency. You know, Elizabeth Warren wrote this agency with, you know, to have a member body that guided it. And the Senate, the Democratic Senate and the Democratic president then whittled it down to a single person ruled the agency. And so Barack Obama just appointed him. And at the same time, he appointed several members to the National Travel Advisory Board or something, Transit Board, I think it was, Transit, actually. And those got challenged under the constitutionality of those appointments. So that threw in Corddry's actions into constitutional, you know, all of this stuff that we're talking about tonight in this part. Is all dealing with Barack Obama's wild over-interpretation of the Constitution and going way past the Constitution in so many different ways, be it these appointments here, creating an agency that and signing off on an agency and promoting an agency that doesn't fit within the parameters of executive power within the Constitution as the courts have ruled over 200 years, or net neutrality, where he basically just did something that the Congress should have done in the first place, which we'll get to. So all of what is going on right now is the Republicans checking the power of the previous administration, which is exactly what all of us said at the time. yeah, you can do this, but what happens when your guy's not in power? Well, their guy's not in power anymore, and now it's all being reversed.
Mm-hmm.
So he appointed this Cordray guy and in 2012. So the New York Times writes, it encapsulates the dueling visions of how the American financial system could be regulated as President Trump moves to loosen regulation created under the Obama administration to rein in the financial industry. Leandra English, the deputy director of the Bureau, who was set to become its temporary chief, filed a lawsuit late Sunday night to block Mr. Trump's choice of someone else from taking control of the agency on Monday morning. Leanna English was one of the original staff members, and she was appointed to be deputy director, and I do believe like that has to be an appointed position too by the Senate. I may be wrong about that, but her appointment to that deputy director position was controversial as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Trump has been seeking to install his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, as the agency's acting director. The Bureau had been a quote-unquote total disaster and needed a new leadership to bring it back to life, Mr. Trump has said on Twitter. Mr. Mulvaney has been openly hostile to the Consumer Bureau, calling it a sad, sick joke, and supporting legislation to eliminate it. At stake is the immediate future of the Consumer Bureau, once one of the last holdouts within the federal government against Mr. Trump's efforts to strip away business regulations. While Mr. Trump can appoint his own director, confirmation could take months and slow down Republican efforts to defang the agency. This dispute has elevated Ms. English to a national spotlight. Before her appointment, she was a low-profile career civil servant who joined the agency. And then it goes on to talk about how she went to the London School of Economics and she's so qualified. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created 6 years ago. Under the leadership of Richard Cordray, the departing director, the Bureau aggressively used its power to develop new rules and punish companies that broke the existing ones. It targeted abusive debt collectors and bolstered protections for mortgage brokers. Under Mr. Cordray, it won nearly $12 billion in refunds and canceled debts for 29 million consumers. But that put it in the crosshairs of the industry critics and many Republicans. Wall Street hates it like the devil hates holy water, said Dick Durbin, the Democrat from Illinois. To protect the agency from political interference, Congress gave it unusual independence and autonomy. The Bureau's leader, who serves a 5-year term, is one of the few federal officials the president cannot fire at will. Beautiful writing.
Yeah.
It's like something I would write about me. You know, I mean, so like I read that after I read the next article I will read you.
Okay.
So it kind of tainted my view. But, like, just if you read the New York Times only, mm-hmm. you go, well, wow, okay, this agency, like, who's against consumer protection, Harry?
Right, you know.
No one loves credit more than you.
Mm-hmm.
Credit, that credit score, you love it.
I love my credit score.
And you don't want anybody messing with it.
Nobody.
And you want it protected.
Mm-hmm.
How could you be against that?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And people need the protections.
Yeah, I mean, so, it's even the name. It's hard to argue against that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's right in the name.
It's in the name. That's they're protecting us. The government is making me feel so good.
Got science by in the name.
Yeah, they're going after those evil Wall Street banksters.
Yeah, that's all they're doing, I
and
swear.
And the mean Republicans just keep going after them and trying to deregulate everything.
Mm-hmm.
So rude. So what you essentially have is...
And Obama wouldn't have to do with this if the Republicans didn't stop blocking him.
Right.
I'd do all these tricks.
So this Rob Cordray... is a guy who's going back to run in Ohio for governor. He's apparently, like, he's one of us. He's very awkward socially and has no shot. But he lost the attorney general's race in Ohio, went to do this. Now he's going back to run for governor because he saved everyone $12 billion. And so he resigned. And then he appointed... After Mick Mulvaney was appointed, who is the current OMB head,
mm-hmm.
Mick Mulvaney was in Congress. He was on the Financial Services Committee. He hated this. He went after it all the time. Like, Rob Cordray was like, he's going to gut it. This is awful. I got to do something. So in a political stunt, basically to get everybody like us talking about him, the president, who is head of the executive branch, appointed Mick Mulvaney. the director, appointed Leanne English. So two people showed up for work today.
Yes.
Well, on Monday, actually. Like, that doesn't really work. So, you know, Andrew McCarthy writes, Trump's in the right in the CFPB, TIFF. Like, what we always have to remember is, yes, Trump is president, and we don't, like, Trump does things that aren't good, like, say, racially charged things like Pocahontas to American heroes that are Native Americans, but he's also the president, and so sometimes he's going to do things that the president should do that is right.
Right.
And so some legal questions are tough, Andrew McCarthy writes. The question of who should lawfully be considered the acting director of the CFPB is not one of them. President Trump unquestionably has the power to name Mick Mulvaney, his Senate-confirmed budget director, to the position, and he has done so. The lawsuit seeking to block his appointment, filed by the deputy director Leandra English, she filed a suit saying, hey, I should have the job, who hopes to take the job herself, is frivolous and offensive.
Mm-hmm.
The CFPB is an unconstitutional monstrosity that ought to be abolished. Indeed, the current TIFF is but a symptom of the underlying disease. The political progressives who created the CFPB sought to make it a quote-unquote independent agency beyond political accountability and interbranch checks and balances. It would be a boon if the dust-up over the acting leadership of the agency would spur the cause that would invalidate the entire enterprise. So, I mean, it just the idea that the president doesn't have the constitutional authority to appoint a vacancy—
Is laughable.
Is laughable.
Yeah, it's laughable. And the whole quote in the New York Times article, that quote that it's a, he called it a sad, sick joke, that's taken out of context, and there's a comma in there, and it was like the whole sentence, like, no, it didn't end, the sentence didn't work that way.
Exactly right.
You know, he was calling it sick, and then it's almost sad, and they just kind of just jumped it all together to call it a sad, sick joke.
And tonight, before we started the program, Judge Tim Kelly of the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia refused to grant Leandra English a restraining order to bar Mulvaney from serving as the acting director. The ruling from Kelly, quote-unquote, well, a Trump appointee, clears the way for Mulvaney to run the CFPB until a permanent director is sworn in or English successfully appeals the decision. Now, here's the other side of the agency. This is by Ronald Rubin. Richard Cordray delivers the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau punchline. Richard Rubin has been really good on writing about this and a lot of great articles that gave me a lot of good context on this at National Review. And this is a little bit about Cordray. Ambitious, cerebral, and socially awkward, Cordray had alternated between stints as an accomplished lawyer and a mediocre politician before he lost Ohio's attorney general election in 2010, and Elizabeth Warren, then a presidential assistant, hired him to lead the nascent bureau's enforcement division. The following July, President Obama bypassed Warren and instead nominated Cordray to be the CFPB's first director. In the marathon standoff that ensued, Republican senators filibustered the nomination. Obama installed Cordray by using an unconstitutional recess appointment. Democrats threatened to change the filibuster rules, and Republicans surrendered. On July 16, 2013, the Senate confirmed the temporary director to a five-year term. Since 2010, the Republicans have argued that the CFPB's unique structure, an independent agency whose single director the president can only fire for cause, with guaranteed funding through the Federal Reserve, profits rather than congressional appropriation process, is a recipe for government abuse, if not unconstitutional. Cordray proved them right. Basically, Warren built a political battleship. Cordray deployed it. The Bureau's powerful media division dictated policy to its regulatory professionals relentlessly, exaggerated the agency's achievements in daily press releases and on social media posts. Political operatives used the CFPB's super independence to stonewall congressional subpoenas and hide unethical investigation tactics, internal discrimination problems, and other inconvenient facts. Republican critics were dismissed as Wall Street sycophants. In fact, Cordray spent the first half of this year quietly promoting and entrenching faithful Democratic employees to obstruct his Republican successor. On June 30th, he awarded the GMMB an additional $15 million contract. I'm trying to look and see what the GMMB, I think it's a, yeah. On June 30th, 10 days later, he delivered a gift bag to Democratic donors in the plaintiff's bar, a rule banning financial businesses from using contractual arbitration clauses to prevent consumers from joining class action lawsuits. Cordray argued that the lawsuits were unnecessary to prevent deceptive practices because individuals rarely sue over improper or bank fees and other small damages. Of course, the CFPB was created to prosecute such violations, but he said that limited resources prevented it from sufficiently taking actions. He then unveiled a video about it, an expensive creation reminiscent of Clinton's Stronger Together ads, and Republicans were forced to use Congressional Review Act to block the rule. Democrats, as a result, gained a talking point for the midterm elections. Then he basically gave a gimme to payday loan lenders and let them survive, even after Democrats, one of the reasons that they wanted this created was to get rid of payday loans. But Cordray had a big problem. President Trump was expected to use the Federal Vacancies Reform Act of 1998 to appoint Mulvaney. Actually, he announced the rule on November 15th. He announced he would resign by the end of the month. He had a big problem. Trump was going to put in Mulvaney, a former member of the House, and who criticized the CFPB. And Cordray feared that Mulvaney would discover evidence the CFPB had been hiding for years, including the Bureau's failure to investigate the Wells Fargo fraud, data manipulation and its failed attempt to regulate car dealers by guessing buyers' races and alleging discriminatory lending, inspector general admonishments to stop obstructing congressional oversight, and some particularly explosive sexual harassment claims against CFPB senior managers. So he put in Leander English as a last-ditch effort to hopefully cover all this up.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew that once Mulvaney got in there, he would be in deep shit.
Yeah. Things going to be covered up. You needed someone in the power that you could trust to, like, hey, tell Bert to get rid of that.
Yeah, exactly right. So that is what the So when you, like, go, oh, this is just a Democratic, like, they just filled it with Democrats, yeah, mm-hmm. to beat Wall Street,
yeah.
and then use it for, like, they went after, they didn't go after Wells Fargo, which donates to Democrats, they went after Merrill Lynch that donates to Republicans.
Yep.
So that $12 billion, if you really look at who those, the people that donated mm-hmm. to Republicans, those were the ones who got regulated, not the ones that donated to Democrats.
Yeah, and they attacked small banks.
Yep.
So that's why there's like a lot of those little tiny little mom-and-pop banks are gone. But like a lot of the chain franchise payday loans out, the more predatory ones are still around.
Yep.
But the smaller ones are gone.
Right.
Yep. And now granted, like some people like the payday loans places, they suck and they're freaking traps. But a lot of people who use them, they need that cash flow.
Yeah.
You know, they just need access to just cheap credit, to easy credit.
Yeah. I mean, people who use payday loans can't get loans anywhere else.
Yeah. It's the only way they can get it.
I can't even get a loan at a payday loan, but that's why I have to go to the pawn shop. Have you ever seen the Western Sky ads for like Western Sky credit?
No.
It's like an 875% rate. It's like you get a loan for $1,000 and you pay $8,000. I mean, there's some real shady stuff out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, but if you just like use your brain and like instead of going, oh, I need $1,000 right now because I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at it and you go, oh, this will cost me $3,000 to borrow.
Yeah. Or you see some people's with their car, like these car loans at 25% interest.
Yeah.
And I look at them as like, 25% interest.
Yeah.
I could buy you a car. You can give me 6% interest.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk after the show. So, in my mind, the CFPB is a good riddance. Like it's government regulation, and it's good. It's well intentioned. It's like
yeah.
everything else. It's well intentioned, but it doesn't deserve to exist.
Right, and what it was trying to do is it did some stupid stuff. Like it helps out. It was supposed to help out people to like make sure they got advance notice if you had an adjustable rate mortgage. Well, if you're dumb enough to get an adjustable rate mortgage,
explain what that is.
Adjustable rate mortgage, like most people have a mortgage that it's at a flat rate. So when you got it in, it's at this rate, at this percentage interest rate, and it's going to be at that rate. So most people go like, well, my mortgage payments is $1,200 a month, you know, and it will always be that jumping up for taxes once in a while. With an adjustable rate mortgage is that interest rate on your mortgage if the price where that wherever the Fed puts the interest rate at, your mortgage payment will jump up and down with that. So if it goes really, really low down to 1%, hey, you want to pay 1%. But
great.
If that thing jacks up to 12, guess what just got jacked up? Your interest rate.
So and a lot of people got killed in the crisis in 2008 with ARMs.
Because they saw that as a cool idea. It can keep going lower. You know, just people who just don't understand math.
Yeah.
You know, or like, well, the other thing is like people's like, well, I got it at 4. You know, what if it dropped? Yeah, but what if it goes to 8? You know, at the same time, it's like, because if it, you know, if it drops down, refi. If it goes up, woo!
Yeah.
Thank God I locked it in at 4. So that's a good, so I can see that. The other thing it does, that it tries to help people out who are into foreclosure, which was huge around that time because of the housing crisis.
Right.
But the thing is, they put so many different protections in it that mean you can possibly stay at a house and not pay the mortgage on the thing for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to wait to get in foreclosure. Then you've got 120 days after that, right? So you could possibly play the game and just kind of stay in a house for a while.
Yeah.
Just squat. You know, but yeah.
That's what I do.
All right. All right. So the let's see, what else are they? Did mortgage services help send out clear monthly statements, so the detailing, because like that's all the good things. Like most people don't know how to read like the mortgage payment and statement.
Right.
I remember when we first got the house, and when my wife would bring me the mortgage statement, I would show her the credit, pop into the computer and try to show her, and she's like, "Well, I put extra in there," and I was showing you in the weird small print payment section, they said you would have to pay so much off per month before they have attacked it at principal if you just paid in the regular processing sheet. You had to, in order to hit principal from just paying off, you have to send in a separate check that says put on principal.
Oh.
So if you say, our mortgage was $1,200 a month and I just sent them $1,400, they would just tack that extra $200 onto next month's payment, not the principal.
Mm.
You would have to send a separate check just for principal.
Right. Yep. And if you hadn't actually read that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just screw yourself over.
Right.
You just keep getting ahead. It's the same thing as that's how I paid off cars so fast. It's like, because, you find out, like, okay, so what's my payoff amount? It's this month? Okay. Which, I need a tech principal. How do I do that?
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So, and it's the best thing to go when you go to a bank. It's like, okay, I see that. How do I tech the principal? I want to pay the principal now.
So let's say you pay off $1,000 on the principal. Does that then lower the amount of interest you're ultimately going to pay? Like, so like if I'm paying, let's say $500 a month for a car payment, and $400 is the principal and $100 is the interest, just for math's sake. And
probably the other way around.
Right. So you're gonna pay less over time by paying on the principal.
That down. Because the interest payment is calculated for compound interest through the year of your term.
Oh, okay.
So it's calculated based on like the amount you owed and you owe, and the principal just calculated over your year.
We'll title this segment "Harry Teaches Spangle How to Be an Adult."
And you just got to learn how to take that out, because if the principal starts going down, then that interest they want to charge, that's not there.
Right.
And, and if you pay too much, you get a check, actually. It's like, yeah, interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes.
So what else did they do?
The services also had they have to credit your payments the day they get them. So let's say they'd made shows. So they, if you, let's say you were overdrafting in your account or you owed something, the moment they received it is the day they have to pay for it. So if you had to, they set up that up. So let's be on Wells Fargo. You owe Wells Fargo on Friday and your check gets there on Friday. Let's say we're not going to process it Monday and want to charge you late fees for that whole weekend, which is scummy.
Right.
It kind of protects you from that, forcing them to that check needs to clear on Friday because that's when it's got there.
Sure.
Now you're just like, well, we need regulations like that. Yeah, but if the CFPB wasn't going after small banks and we had more small credit unions in your area, that crap like that wouldn't happen.
Sure.
Yeah,
like I have a friend who used to be a stock trader, and we were talking about the stock. We were talking about Bitcoin today, actually. By the way, Michael Arrington, founder of TechCrunch, who's kind of a crazy person but also very influential, is starting a Bitcoin hedge fund.
Ooh.
So I wish I had $10,000 to buy a Bitcoin, because now that there's going to, and there's multiple hedge funds that are starting to get into Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be Ian right now over at Free Talk Live. I wish I had listened to Roger 3 years ago and set up the Bitcoin. Like the listeners who said, how can I donate in Bitcoin? And I said, I don't understand it. I'm not going to do it. I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize. I'm a dummy. It's at 10,000 now. And now that hedge funds are getting in, I'll never be able to afford it again. So,
my wife just got a new phone, and I left some Bitcoin on her wallet from Porkfest for a while back. Totally forgot about it. $600 just sitting on there.
Nice.
It's like, whoa. I was like, transferring. Let me go. Girl, it's God, I forgot about this. She had like a little, I don't know. She's just like, I don't remember how much I left on there. It's not much.
Yeah, not much. Like,
but that was years ago when she used it. Nuts. It was crazy.
But we were talking about, he was talking about how he was a stockbroker during the Silicon Valley crash in the late 90s, and he's like, you know, I was dealing with clients who were losing, you know, $250,000 in 30 seconds because the trade wouldn't clear fast enough. So I asked, who buys?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, here's the screwed up thing is, if you're dealing with like a Chase or a Merrill Lynch or whatever, and they have a buy rating on it,
mm-hmm.
and then you go to like Moody's or Standard & Poor's and it says hold,
mm-hmm.
like, that means that they know it's about to go down, and so they're trying to dump their stock that Merrill Lynch owns onto the Merrill Lynch clients so they don't take a bath on it. You know, so they make money both ways. They get you coming and going. He's like, I just couldn't do it because it was just that you were ripping people off and you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of...
But there's other ways to get the cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is not the only thing on the news, and... And the thing is, you know, Bitcoin is going to continue going up. It's still cheap. Buy what you can. Buy what you've also, if you want to get in, buy what you're ready to lose also. Because at the same token, a lot of people, so you see all these people that made all this money, they also could have lost their shirts.
Oh, I remember, I mean, Bitcoin, like, because we've been following it forever, just because we're in the libertarian movement. I mean, there was a time where people were freaking out because Bitcoin hit 1,000.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it just like it tanked, you mm-hmm. know? So it's but if you have hedge fund speculators, because here's the thing, libertarians have kind of bankrolled in a lot of ways the backbone of Bitcoin, and they view it as currency.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're getting now, this inflation, are people who consider it an investment. And that's a very different mindset.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at it as an investment, it's something that you will flee when it starts to crash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at it as a currency, then you're going to keep what you've got and use it over time. So I don't know. I think it's two different philosophy shifts, and I'll be interested to see how the entrance into Bitcoin from traditional financial entities and people outside of kind of the tech space that get it, kind of the libertarian tech space that kind of has been around mm-hmm. Bitcoin. I'll be interested to see what happens as quote unquote normies get into it.
Yeah. And back up your wallet. The wallet dot dat file. Make sure you guys back up your wallets.
How do you do that?
Basically, it's just a. If you've got an Airbits wallet, it backs up for you. You just got to pull the file off your phone and put it on something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you've got Airbits through Chrome, or I say Airbits a bunch because it's such an easy wallet to use.
Okay.
It's my favorite wallet I use to move cash around with, not a wallet I use. Because it's easy to encrypt, easy to move different wallets and move things through it. But it's a file because it's this basic electronic file mm-hmm. on your phone. You've got to back that up and make sure you keep your username and your password because, you know, one, you know, you lose your phone and everything. You've got your DAT file. You can get your wallet back and get your cash, you know, recover your thing and get your cash back because it is like cash. That's the sucky thing about it. And once you put Bitcoins on your phone, make sure you do put encryption on your phone, because if someone steals your phone, if there's no encryption, I just got to go smiley face, and it unlocks your phone. And, you know, now it's like, oh, crap, there's a Bitcoin wallet on here. Oh, it's just using pins. It's just four numbers. Beep, 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 beep. Got it. Thank you. I've got your pin now. Right. Now I'm in your Bitcoins. Scan it. It's done. It's gone. No FDIC insurance. It's gone. It's the Wild Wild West still. So, you know, so if you do put Bitcoins on your phone, your laptop, make sure that even to access that drive, even that backup file, is encrypted. Someone has to go through another file to get through it. Make sure you write down your passcodes, because people with powerful computers, or just like people who like hack passwords, you know, they're not hacking passwords maliciously to get into people's computers anymore. Now they're doing it for Bitcoin wallets and making a lot of money doing it. You know, they're just like, you know, whatever I get out, I get 60%. And you may say, that's outrageous. It's like, all right, here you go. Here's your brick. It means nothing to you.
Yeah.
You know, and with it 10,000, you know, it's like, screw it. Take 60%. I don't care. You get it done in the day, take 65.
Yeah, you'll need that net neutrality to protect you from So I haven't I mean, I really dived in to net neutrality over the weekend.
I'm going to pee on this one.
No. Where are you going?
No.
I don't want to get too deep into it tonight. I mainly want to give you a chance to, because you said, listen, can we talk about, I've got things to say, but you go ahead and pee. But people are freaking out. Like, and I posted about it a few times and had some pretty thoughtful discussions about net neutrality on the Facebook page at We Are Libertarians with several people. And a lot of people brought up some really interesting points, both pro and negative. And we're going to do a full episode again, because I feel like we haven't really kind of dove into this enough, because what's out there is really hyperbolic. And John C. Dvorak wrote an article in PC World that basically was like, why is everybody freaking out? Everybody calm down. You know, the internet is going back to 2015. The internet was really good from 1988 to 2015. And it just does seem to me that people are being very dramatic, especially on the anti-Ajit Pai side. You know, the people who are upset about what the FCC will do next month, they're very dramatic, and they're freaking out. And it's just, to me, is the freaking out by the, it's like, not
everyone.
Yeah, like it's not pro net neutrality. Everybody's pro net neutrality. Like, that's the thing about this. Nobody, I think everybody, and we're really at a point where everybody agrees, yes, the internet should be free and open, mm-hmm. and it should stay that way. Like, even people who are in the government, like, that's what Ajit Pai says. Mm-hmm. That's what the other FCC people are on the other side of it. Like, people on both sides of this issue, all of them agree the internet should stay free and open. So it's just, how do we best do that to structure this in the government to make sure that it never gets regulated?
But the internet is not free and open.
Okay.
The minority of the people talking about it, like the ISPs, they get crapped on, but mm-hmm. they're the people have to. Now, granted, they're not any like type of savior in any of this crap.
Sure.
Because they've been caught, you know, with their heads, you know, their hands red-handed, like doing this to companies.
Yeah, I mean, net neutrality was started because an internet company blocked in 2005 Vonage mm-hmm. from their service, and that's when it really got started. It was like really brought up because somebody was a bad actor and started this. But like, after 12 mm-hmm. years of arguing over net neutrality, like, it's so clear from a consumer standpoint that we don't want this, that Comcast feels the need to tweet out that they're not going to do it. Like, at some point, like, I just feel like people on that side, it's hard for me to really buy into it, because so many of the people arguing from that side had a bad customer experience with Comcast or AT&T, and that is really the basis of their emotional argument.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is, like, well, it's so bad because a lot of people have been bastardized by AT&T, Comcast, Time Warner, Bright House, you name it, because these ISPs have such gigantic minorities, but monopolies in each area, so that you have to deal with them, and there's nowhere else to go to.
Right.
That's the other reason too. It's like, and they won't compete with each other. You know, they won't go. And they, it's like OPEC, but for bandwidth.
Right.
And just. It's crazy. And the way that some people are freaking out. And my same thing is, I always said, is like, if they can, they will. If they aren't already, you know, because you have no proof they're not really throttling things right now.
Sure.
And they're like, and look how slow it took them to get what, gigabyte speed everywhere around across the country.
But allow me to stick up for the ISPs, like. If you, and I'm not nearly as knowledgeable on this, that's why I'm trying to catch up on all of it to make sure that I represent all the arguments and come down on it in a way that I think is the best for Liberty. But, like, if you look at the progress over the last 15 years in mm-hmm. terms of bandwidth, with the exception of my apartment complex, but, like, I'm having to use a hotspot mm-hmm. to stream the video, like, the service has really, it's hard to build an infrastructure, right? Like, it's hard to build that many lines and in that many places and then continually upgrade it on a brand new technology that's constantly being redeveloped. Like, that's a hard task, and I think if you're sitting there as the CEO of Comcast, Bright House, AT&T, trying to figure out how to continually upgrade service, I just don't think that Comcast and AT&T sit there and think, how can I screw them out of their internet today? Like,
I think AT&T does that.
Like, I mean, it's...
NEA...
and nobody hates AT&T more than me. I literally think they're the worst company on the planet. Like, I have them for my phone. I have them for my internet. Like, I have it, it's awful. The octopus that is AT&T is terrible. But it can't be easy to, like, have millions of homes across. And maybe the problem really is, like, these companies are too big, trying to do too much,
mm-hmm.
and so they and they don't allow competition to come in, and Correct. They buy off local governments.
Yep.
That to me seems to be the real problem that we ought to be fighting, not how can we get the federal government to regulate this under Title I or Title II.
Right.
Like, that shouldn't be the libertarian argument, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, please email me at editor@wearelibertarians.com if you think I'm wrong, because I want to hear both sides of this issue, because I see libertarians that I respect on both sides of the issue, and so I want to, like, I just want to hear, like, but I just don't, I'm coming down on the side of Ajit Pai, because I see the other side really arguing hypotheticals as opposed to, like, giving me facts of, this is really what these companies have done wrong. This is where, you know, I just don't see the federal communications. Like, I work in an industry that is a free speech. So if I wanted to, like, if I wanted to go on, this is completely free speech. I can say fuck here. Okay? Like, I can say cunt.
Whoa.
But if you were on the radio, you would have heard that the way that it was, which is bleeped. Because mm-hmm. I'll go back and bleep that, because I promise not to say that word anymore. But
can't understand normal thinker.
I know normies, they're ruining America. But no, like, it's I can't go on and say whatever I want on radio, which is regulated by the FCC. Mm-hmm. So I just don't buy that the FCC is going to be the great protector of our free speech. You know?
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, the lot of the companies, like, are, because it's the ISPs are a minority, actually, in all this, seeking redress from the government to go after the group. But they're the only minority because they paid the government to make sure they were the only companies that went for it.
Right.
You know? So, you know, so again, people in the chat are talking about, yeah, because, like, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, all these larger video companies, they eat up most of the bandwidth on the internet. That's no hairs, no tails, especially when it starts getting to if they want to get into 4K streaming,
right.
They're going to eat up bandwidth, you know? And to treat each packet the same, that's going to be awful. First off, I would prefer if the I think the libertarian position is creating more. It's trying to get local governments to create more internet ISPs. That'd be great. The other libertarian position, which should be the ISP, should know what my traffic is. How about that? You have no idea what I'm sending. How about that?
That's actually a great idea.
That's a better thing to me. I don't want you to know.
No,
you just know I have traffic. I have bandwidth. Why do you need to know I'm going to Netflix?
Harry wants all packets treated equally.
All packets you don't know. Agnostic packets. We had to do that back in, like, okay, back in the, let's see, the 2000, and trying to remember. Well, way back machine. You used to be do the hotspots, right? When you give you unlimited access to the internet and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you did anything else, like streaming or anything else, they would throttle you on your Wi-Fi on your hotspot connection.
Right.
You could use a VPN, tunnel into a VPN server, right? Have your high-speed connection there, and you could do anything you want on their same unlimited connection because they couldn't tell what the heck you were doing on your freaking hotspot.
Hmm.
Beautiful. It was beautiful, beautiful time, you know? Yeah.
It's a great time for the internet.
Heck yeah.
Equal packets.
Well, yeah, because they couldn't tell what you were doing. They just like, okay, he's doing VPN traffic to the server. And the server that was connected to somewhere, that one, you know, to the hard line, that was going out on the net, pulling things down.
Right.
You know? It's, what if I don't want my ISP to know what I'm doing? That's to me, I don't want my ISP to know what my packets are. I don't want them to. I prefer, now granted, that would entail creating more ISPs. You know, or and so I can get the ISP that I want. The ISP that, like, you know, just agnostic. Nope, you just surf. We don't look. We don't keep any logs. You know, just surf. You know,
right?
That's the better, you know, libertarian position that allows safeguards for people. One, down to like whistleblowers, because hey, if they don't know what they're doing online, they can easily get, you know, get stuff out there.
Uh huh.
When the other thing with it goes to it, like this whole, like, the agnostic idea, is because Motherboard.com did an article about cryptocurrencies. Because this whole throttling aspect, that works the same way. Hey, what's your favorite internet cryptocurrency? It uses the internet protocol. Which, this article, oh man, I think I got banned from, like, one Bitcoin group. Because I kept going, like, I told you freaking so. I told you so. Bitcoin is awesome. It uses the internet. But at the same time, if you control the internet, you can kind of screw with Bitcoin.
Right.
You can't stop it, but you can freaking screw with it. I can make it almost virtually unusable.
That's kind of why I've not really cared much about cryptocurrency, because it's like, I don't know, it's as make-believe as fiat currency.
Well, you know? It's a little bit more hardline than that, because some people are doing work for it, but it's about the same way, you know. It's
Well, I just triggered somebody. Yeah. Somebody just got real triggered.
Yeah, probably. There's somebody in the...
Somebody's real triggered. I mean, the internet is a
series of...
Trying to
find that motherboard article I put in the Trello chat, but I can't see it. I'm sure Spangle must have covered up my motherboard.com article, which I'm guessing memes.
In the meantime,
I'm going to assume...
The internet is not a big truck. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. The internet is not a big truck. The internet is a series of tools. The internet.
That's a 2006 classic. This is Senator Stevens from back in 2006. Painfully trying to explain net neutrality on the Senate floor.
Is allowing all of these entities that support this to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. Now, the internet, you know, let's go back. Internet started with a concept of local-to-local connections across the country. You could go for Air Alaska, but you had to go through local connections to get there. The industry wisely provided for streaming, for in effect a new kind of long distance, and that's what we've got. We've got a service that's immune to distance, and it's there for the consumer. But when we take indicate that anyone that wants to use this system for massive commercial purposes. Well, there's one company now. You can get sign up and you can get.
These are the people. I want to say, hey.
By delivery service, okay.
These are the people. We should have a constitutional amendment that will guarantee internet freedom. But like, these are the people that would be writing that.
You change your order. But you pay for that, right? this service is now going to go through the internet, and what you do is you just go to a place on the internet, and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them, and it's delivered to you, and this delivery charge
is free, talking about Netflix.
Right?
Yeah.
Which it's
10 movies streaming across that internet. And what happens to your own personal internet? I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning.
All right,
Friday.
Okay, all right.
Yesterday.
It's getting to the good part.
Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. And here we have this one situation
where
enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now. They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And if you don't understand, those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material.
So basically he was arguing for net neutrality by using Netflix in 2006, which he's saying there's this company that delivers movies via the mail, and now they're trying to clog up the tubes with streaming movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like, you think about how much has changed in 10 years, like how much we depend on, like, it's like Netflix is 25% of the internet traffic.
Easily.
Yeah, I mean, really.
And Amazon Video, and let's see, there's YouTube, everything,
right.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it. Like, that's, I kind of want to know what side those companies are on, and then I want to go, I'm on the opposite side of those companies, because those companies don't want to pay for, you know, I don't know. I'm just still up in the air on it, but I'm just not seeing very effective arguments that are real arguments. I'm just seeing a lot of bitching and hyperbole from the people who are freaking out over Ajit Pai taking the internet back to 2015. And he made that, there's a great podcast that he did with Matt Lewis, the Matt Lewis podcast, where he did an interview with him, and he was like, the infrastructure development has slowed 5% in the last 2 years because they have to go to the FCC and get clearance.
Right.
So,
to do anything.
Right.
Well, that's the other problem. It's like, the FCC has held back communications since its inception.
Okay. Right.
It's meant to regulate scarce resources,
mm-hmm.
and it has done a terrible job at that. Like the guy was talking about long-distance services. That was only a thing because there was like one freaking phone company. Long-distance phone technology hasn't changed since its inception.
Right.
The only reason it has gotten better, has worked better, is because we went around that stupid system
mm-hmm.
that they created, that the Bell Company, sorry, yeah, boomers, freaking boomers, okay? The freaking Bell, they created that Bell monopoly, and they broke it up. Like, well, now there's Southern Bell and Northern Bell. And it's not this. Because a lot of us, like 90s kids, remember, I'm having to put in, like, the stupid, like, what, calling cards or 1010, so you can call collect.
1010-231.
Yeah, whatever dumb technology call long distance on.
Right.
Which, like I said, the technology haven't changed. Now, granted, we've moved on to voice over IP technology, so you really can't, like, so they, it forced them, with that competition through cell phones and voice over IP, to force the phone companies to not stop charging for long distance. They still put it as a perk, hey, you get free long distance. But the same tech lets you call from here, lets you call anywhere inside the continental United States. It's bullcrap.
Right.
You know, and the same thing is like, well, now you get international calling with voice over IP calling. I don't need international calling.
Yeah.
Why can I boot up my Discord server and talk to people in New Zealand all the time? I do it on a regular. I talk to people in New Zealand and Sweden every day.
I mean, Apple invented FaceTime, and then it changed the whole game.
Yeah, they invented FaceTime.
I know they did.
And the podcast. They also invented the podcast. Okay.
Right.
And the MP3 player.
Yep. I'm gonna cough now. You do the show.
Waiting for right now. I'm picturing like Galt probably hitting his head on the wall. I was like, no,
that's
never.
The oh Galt,
good old Galt. But yeah, that's so. My whole thing with net neutrality is like it's this. Either way, you lose. Either way, you're screwed. I would prefer moving to a solution that it is about as screwed up as Indiana's liquor laws. It's so convoluted. so much stuff has been tacked on to fix other issues instead of fixing the original issue that the FCC, because the FCC is involved. And it just keep, they just keep tacking things on. And I like the idea of taking something off, right? But they're not going to just completely take it off. There's no way they're just going to remove all these rules and not leave something else. Yeah, we know. You can both sit there. Everyone's like, no, they're gonna bring it back. Oh, not all. They're gonna leave something. They're gonna leave something behind. They're gonna be, because that bill is longer than like these four things that it did. Like, no, that bill is longer than that.
Yeah,
there's something that's leaving behind.
All of it. Like that's like libertarians. It, to me, just in all of it, it's like we shouldn't be arguing over FCC regulations. We should be arguing over like why isn't this being passed by Congress?
Right.
Yeah. Why are we still regulating the internet, which is a series of tubes?
Yeah.
Why based on a 1938 piece of legislation?
Yeah. Why should we think it's okay that we should run copper cabling from houses to fiber optic cabling?
Right.
This is dumb. This is dumb.
Shouldn't we be trying to change things at the local level? Like, it wouldn't be that hard for me to go knock on 50 neighbors' doors,
mm-hmm,
and then go to my apartment complex and go to AT&T and say, I have 50 people who want to upgrade and change the service.
Mm-hmm.
What can you help me do? And I could probably do that. Like, but I'm a lazy American who doesn't want to do that work. And like that kind of work, yeah, is the essential part of the American democracy,
mm-hmm,
where you basically, like, if you want to change things at the local level or with at the government level, at the company level, at the housing level, like, you have to put in some work. And people are just sitting here going, I don't want to work, I don't want to do anything, I shouldn't have to, and it should just be done for me,
mm-hmm,
and let's get the magic man in the government to fix it for me. Yep. And to see libertarians like taking that argument,
mm-hmm,
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. It's like it's weird seeing these faux libertarians sit there and talk about this stuff. Like, well, the FCC needs to regulate this. I'm like, so like every other instance when the government regulates something, it's crap. But they need to regulate. They need to regulate this heavily
because their word means something.
Yeah,
like we have written down the Constitution,
mm-hmm,
and look at how they've bastardized it.
Yeah.
Look at the Consumer Protection Bureau that we just talked, yeah, about. Like, that has been used for nothing but capital, like, cronyism.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm,
and I have to say, like, this argument of cronyism, if you go and look at open source and the telecom industry and where the donations went, in 2015, you have a Democratic president who has Tom Wheeler, the Democratic appointed chairman of the FCC. The FCC is a body that is currently majority Republican, 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, it was majority Democrat, so that's how they squeezed this through. Again, it was unconstitutional, in my opinion, for them to make this Title II change in the first place. And I think if you go back and listen to this podcast and the episode that we did about it, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so weird to have like the CFPB and the net neutrality stuff coming up. And we've done episodes on it.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't gone back and listened to the net neutrality episode yet, but it's a Democrat FCC that passes this. And if it were such a huge burden on the telecom industry,
mm-hmm,
go look at the chart of donations by party on Open Secrets. The blue spike that happens in 2016 is unreal. I posted it on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Like, if they felt so burdened by the regulations that had been passed in 2015, why did they just dump money on them in, mm-hmm, 2016 and reward them? And, like, they donated to Hillary Clinton $1.1 million. They donated to Trump $99,000. So she got $1 million more than Donald Trump. So to argue that Donald Trump is being bought off by the telecom industry to do something in their favor is just ludicrous. Like, if you go to Open Secrets and you actually do your homework, you can destroy the cronyism charge outright because we have the donation records. Like, the telecom industry has donated to the people that are on the oversight, the head of the oversight committee, the people that sit on the oversight committees of the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
The telecom industry has been raining money on those people for years. So That's the argument against the FCC being the regulatory agency. Because I work in an industry where the companies, the radio companies that in 1996 got deregulation and then got a big, like in 96, that's when Clear Channel and Cumulus and all these other companies just started buying up stuff. Mm-hmm. Like Clear Channel especially just started like gobbling everything up. Now they have $14 billion in debt and they're looking at a collapse. Yeah. They had a like CBS had a problem employee in Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And so they managed to help. I firmly believe that CBS and Clear Channel and some of these people who were getting fined by the FCC used those fines to get Howard Stern fired. Like the FCC isn't a free speech organization. Like it isn't. It's just I can tell you having worked in radio for 15 years, I got in trouble one time because I said scumbag on the air. And I got pulled into an office. I was a baby broadcaster. I'd been there a year. And they said, you can't say scumbag on the air. I said, what are you talking about? I said, scumbag is a term for a condom. I go, I have never heard that in my life. And nobody's more perverted than me. Like, I've thought of every dirty joke ever. Like, I've never heard, like, sorry, someone out there may get offended and write a letter and we could get fined.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, so then if an innocuous word like scumbag can't be used, what are the limits? And they go, we don't know. Well, does the FCC tell you what you can or can't say? No. It's literally whatever one person, like the show that I work for, one person got his panties in a bunch about one comment on the air. He rallied the community, the mm-hmm. local community, to write in. A guy by the name of John Price wrote in to the FCC with like 50 other people and got them in trouble with the FCC. And then you've got to have lawyers and defend yourself and you're like looking at getting fired and there's people's jobs online. Like what was said wasn't even bad. You know, Bubba the Love Sponge got the single biggest fine in FCC history because he played sound effects of killing a pig.
Yep.
He didn't kill a pig, but he still got fined because it went against community standards.
Yep.
So we're talking about an organization that can be bought and sold.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
All the time. It's a political organization like every other bureaucracy in the government. And it is... Why do you think the Janet Jackson thing was a big deal? It's because the head of the FCC was beholden to the Christian right and the Republican administration and mm-hmm. George W. Bush and John Ashcroft and all these people that started like, well, we got to do something about this. And so they started cracking down on this stuff. And mm-hmm. then Michael Powell, the son of Colin Powell, was appointed the next FCC director and ended it.
Yep.
So, like, let me repeat. The son of the Secretary of State was then appointed to the head of the FCC.
Let that sink in.
But it's an organization not given to cronyism. Like, so I have a really hard time getting to the place where I have sympathy for the argument that the FCC will be our savior because mm-hmm. I've worked in this industry and I I'm sorry, there are some things that I'm an expert on and you guys are not. And like, it's Harry knows networking security better than I do. Like, this is the weird thing about this net neutrality argument is that it really shows off the death of the expertise in our society. Like, everybody's an expert now on social media.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter what my 15 years of radio experience have taught me about the FCC. The other person just is right because they read a few articles. Like, I know that's kind of what we do here, but I also do have 15 years of political experience and have run a political party and run campaigns. Like, there are things that make certain people in our society experts, and we should listen to those people. And, like, that's the crazy thing about the social media world right now and the Trumpian politics we have. Experts don't count.
Yeah.
Don't believe experts. Don't believe media. They're all wrong. Just go with your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a very dangerous place to get to.
Yep.
And that's a very bad way to craft policy. Your emotions against Comcast, that's a bad way to craft policy. A hypothetical situation that they might do something that happened in England 20 years ago is a bad way to craft policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's so That's kind of where I'm heading with it, but I'd love to hear other people's opinion on it.
Technically, everyone that listens that has a phone has an FCC license. Just the fact of owning and doing a phone, you have a GSM transmitting license, which is weird. But you, under certain conditions, it's you actually have a license to that's your little GSM device on your phone. Right. The other thing with it is if you think that we are exaggerating or like misleading, or you really just like, no, the FCC isn't like this, get your ham radio license. Get your ham radio license. Go through the steps of getting your ham radio's license. Meet a couple of hams. Talk to them. They're a great group of guys, except the older ones. Some of the older ones kind of suck. They're a little busy. They're a little, stickler to a lot of the different rules and stuff like that. And they're some of them, and they're boomer narcs, and they narc on people. They can be very annoying. But yeah, go out and get your ham license. It'll be fun. You'll love it. You'll love the entire experience. Just be glad that they finally stopped you making you do Morse code, okay? But you'll love it. It's a fun experience. It's a great skill. And it's a great community, especially when you get to go and try to talk to people in different states and stuff like that and get to understand the ham community. But you understand the scrutiny that they're under through the FCC and that how they feel about anyone else violating those rules because they had to jump through all these hoops. Okay, and that is what you're dealing with when you deal with anything. So, like, the only really free radio you ever get is people doing, you know, like pirate radio. People are out there just like say, "Screw it, I'm hooking up a tower, I'm broadcasting," and those people usually get caught by hams or by people who just rat out the radio signal, you know, and by the FCC. The FCC is just kind of like they look for snitches to hit them up. All right, so. The other thing, Pornhub. I think Pornhub hit with this type of thing. They would probably freak out and just make their own, you know, cell towers and just start selling private internet service to everybody. And since they can probably charge you at a premium, they just charge you, you know, so you just be premium Pornhub members just to get their internet service. They can let you go to the rest of the internet, but your homepage will be Pornhub and it will be super, super fast 4K. Okay? So, you know, the idea of like getting other businesses into it, yeah. Because even like, let's say like with Amazon, they're getting like, they bought all the Whole Foods. It'd be great if they put GSM towers on there and you can get Amazon internet, or Walmart, get Walmart internet. They put GSM towers in all their Walmarts. They put them on top of the Walmarts, you know. But the GSM technology, transferring internet access that way, that's regulated by the FCC because they only want so many different towers. You got to do this under a power brand. It's all this other junk to try to prevent people from abusing, which is quote unquote limited resources out there in the radio spectrum. But it's not 4K porn scares me. Just okay. Wait for VR 4K porn, okay? In 120 frames per second, okay?
No, thank you.
All right?
Okay. I don't need to be that close.
It's 120 frames per second with VR, you know.
Like, I don't need 1080, to be honest. Like, I'm a child of the 90s. Like, give me that slow-loading 256K porn.
Have you ever seen 60 frames?
No.
Oh, man, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I hear that it's beautiful from friends on the internet. That's where I hear it from.
You are something else.
But the, that's my thing. That's my thing on net neutrality. Yeah, there's more layers to this stuff because it's the internet. There's seven layers. But no, the FCC should just get out of the game. That's it. There's no such thing as a good regulation. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as a good regulation.
I honestly
don't think so. You know, the biggest thing is to get out of the system, get away from them, and try to work around it. Just like Bitcoin and other things, people trying to use cryptocurrencies outside the internet system or get around things, those are the people you should support. Those are the actions that libertarians should take, okay? It's because if they can, they will, and if they aren't, they're doing it. And because with their fingers on the button, so they prove to you that the ISPs knows exactly what you're doing on the network, and they can throttle anything they want. It doesn't do anything like that. They got these levers and switches. Granted, how they're gonna and you're thinking like, well, how are they gonna manage all this traffic? People like me, they're just gonna buy people up like me to use that to throttle traffic, to find different things like that. It'll be awesome. I'll get paid a whole bunch of money to throttle traffic.
Wouldn't it be great if all these experts got together and wrote some legislation and started talking to, like, friendly congressmen and start putting together a piece of legislation. Like, I think of the Elizabeth Warren story is really, like, a crazy story, right? So here's this person who is a Harvard professor who writes this paper, and then within just a few years, that paper gets turned into a new agency, and then she gets, you know, runs for Senate and wins. Now they're talking about her as a presidential candidate. Like, that's, like, that should, on so, like, even though it's Elizabeth Warren and she's a socialist, like, that should inspire you to action. Like, it is, we sometimes sit there and think, oh, the Leviathan is too big, it's too strong, but it's super easy sometimes to make change. Like, sometimes you just get really lucky, and then all of a sudden something happens, and then you're in the Senate in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're in this moment where there's this, you know, we're going, what's going to happen is the courts are going to end up deciding how the internet is regulated. That to me isn't the best outcome. Like, we can sit here and argue about the philosophy of net neutrality or the FCC and who and how they should regulate it and all these hypotheticals, but that's part of what this show is about, is not arguing the hypotheticals, but let's look at the reality of the situation and then try to make decisions about that.
Yep.
Because you and I can sit here and argue about, do you want to be a minarchist? Do you want to be an anarchist? Do you want to be a mutualist? Like, that's all fine and good, but we're probably not going to have, like, true that decision in our lifetime.
Anarcho-monarchist, really.
Right. We could get lucky, but, like, probably the history tells us that, like, we're not going to see an anarcho-capitalist America in our lifetime. But so let's work within the framework and advocate for as much liberty within that framework that we have now, and then also keep an eye on philosophy and making sure we're pure, but and making sure that we understand the principles, because it's easy to, like, drift and start advocating, like, we're not left and we're not right. We're not, like, some people have written in and said, it's hard for me to connect with you guys because I'm a conservative and I'm trying to find where we have common ground. And I agree with you on some stuff, but some stuff you guys are just wrong. It's like, well, then we're just not going to agree. Like, we don't have to.
Yeah.
You can sit there and go, libertarians are right about, like, 90% of stuff. And there are liberals that are probably listening right now, and they go, yeah, that North Korea part was really right on.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't agree with the consumer protection part. And the conservatives will flip-flop. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we're here to be libertarians. We're not here to be conservatives or liberals. Like, but the reality is, what is Ajit Pai doing? Is it a good thing? And let's discuss that.
Right.
Not these hypothetical situations, because that's not really doing any good. That's not doing society any good. It's not doing you any good. Like, you're sitting there, if you're anything like me, you're sitting there on your phone arguing with people on Facebook at 9 o'clock at night, getting so pissed off that you can't fall asleep for 2 hours. Like, what good did that do me? It didn't do me any good. Like, it didn't do them any good. It didn't do any, you know, but so.
Yeah.
Because we weren't arguing the facts. We weren't arguing what's happening. We were arguing hypotheticals and general philosophy and mm-hmm. what ifs. Mm-hmm. And, well, they did it, so you can too. And logical fallacies. Mm-hmm. And it's just, mm-hmm. like, it's this weird place that we're in. And it's just, like, shut up. Get to work.
Everyone summons their straw hat megazords and they fight each other.
Right. Like, I'd much rather spend my time in Discord.
Yeah, isn't that a nice place?
With all my fellow We Are Libertarians nerds. If you haven't joined the Discord, you should. It's a lot of fun. So, kind of wrap us up on the net neutrality.
Okay. Just like your leader said, try to argue the facts. Look at what's going on. And the other thing is, like, when it comes down to it, it's, if you believe that, if the government regulations hinders business, stops innovation, and every other area, but this one area isn't, and you want to readdress what you're really doing and what you're really thinking about in this area, and think you may have been sold a crappy hill of beans on this.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that the ISPs aren't bad actors, and that do not do bad things. They sure do, but they're protected by, once again, regulation. So removing these regulations, moving barriers, the government stops and removes these barriers of entry to allow more small-time cell phone carriers or more broadband access to different areas or different high-speed access or just access to, or level 3 gets us better access to the fiber, That's the better case. That's the case you should be going on to get people access around these ISPs that want to do these actings. Because they're going to throttle or do what they want in an area, and they're going to do what they want. Unless they have competition, you know, the prices are going to stay skyrocketing, and they're going to go higher. And if you think you're going to get around them by cutting the cable, you are wrong. They will just raise the price on bandwidth. Or, just like Comcast did, put data caps on it. You can only do 500, you know, gigs a month on your home data line. Just watch. They've done it. People have freaked out, but it's, you know, just like net neutrality and everything else, it's just going to come back around until you're ready to accept it.
That's what she said.
No. once again, like I said, jump on the Discord. It gets the DMZ goes hard in the paint sometimes, so just be careful. You can stay on the starter safe zone as long as you want. You don't have to go into the other channels. If you have a request for a different channel, like or you just want to stay in the sports channel, or, yeah, we talk sports. We also do there's some econ talks inside there. And like I said, the DMZ, it's just like that. It's a demilitarized zone, and it's shots are just firing everywhere from all different sides.
Any other thoughts for this podcast?
I really do hope that Pornhub does show people up and makes their own ISP one day. That'd be awesome. It'd be amazing, just like they did the snowplows. And another thing is, next time anyone, and I always like to joke, my funny joke I like to say when people's like, well, the internet would be regulated like a city utility, I like to bring up Flint, Michigan. But yeah, all right, I'm done.
All right, thanks for joining us here on this episode. We want to thank our Patreon supporters. Harry, last week, right as we signed off, goes, did you do the Patreon thank you? I was like, yeah, of course I did. I did not. So thanks to Christy Avery, Craig DeCosta, and Jason Doolittle, who donate $100 a month. They're beloved people. Brantley Spicer, Joey Tarner, Pete Jones, Carly Ernst, Brandon Kester, Heidi Aldridge, Christian Emmons, Dan Dunbar, Doug Stream, Christopher Brokoff, and Todd Singer, thank you guys for donating $25 a month. You can also donate $10, $5, or $1 a month at Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. You are helping support this program, and you are also you are getting some cool stuff, especially extra content. We are going to be recording another League of Liberty podcast, which is my friends Mark Clare of Lions of Liberty, Johnny Rocket from the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, Roger Paxton from Lava Flow. We will be recording a third episode of the League of Liberty tomorrow night, and that will be the bonus content this week. So we've done two, and they've been very exciting. So be sure to get that. That's like an hour and a half of extra content. So if you love this show and you love the kind of stuff that we do, then you will love that. So thank you for joining me, Harry.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
I appreciate it. All right. And I appreciate all of you for listening. And until then, be good to each other.
Trying to pick apart just the anarchist. And everyone's response is like, meh, Tom Woods is a spook, too. He's a spook.
Are you kidding me?
You're a spook.
They're turning on Tom Woods now.
No one's turning on Tom Woods. But he's okay. A spook. He's still a spook. This is our podcast. Spook.
And by spook, you mean government agent.
Yeah. Okay. No.
I'm just asking. Don't get mad at me.
See, what happens is Tom Woods is a government shill. He does COINTELPRO. I've got the documents right here. I talk to my sources, right?
That's pretty good.
We've got. I've listened to Alex Jones for years.
I haven't listened in like months, but I need to.
See, it's what happens when if you ever give someone like the seeds of liberty and you don't keep on the person,
right,
they eventually will sprout, and the first thing they get their hands on that sounds remotely anti-government, they'll clinch on, and that's why so many people are conspiracy theorists, because, you know, some libertarian uncle put the seeds in somebody and then stopped hanging around them, and they turned 19 years old.
It's
and
like Kevin Spacey, yeah. Roy Moore, yeah. The one putting the seeds of liberty.
The seeds of liberty in
15.
Them.
No.
You gotta get into them while you're young. Just like, are we on air?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's say we're not.
I gotta ask because I was gonna say like an awful joke.
We're recording the audio, but
oh, then I won't say it then.
But we're firing up the Facebook now. I know exactly what you mean, and
I was just saying there was another libertarian person.
Don't mention that name. I don't.
That's why I said I was like,
you know how long I've had to. I'm not that same guy.
See my phone?
When that happened, people were constantly like tagging me, going, you motherfucker. Like, it's not me. It's a different one. He has an R at the end of his name.
And then you use the SEO for that to get your get the podcast out there?
Exactly.
I think we've got you.
I thought about doing the SEO course on lynda.com.
Uh-huh.
But right before I get ready to do it, I was doing some other stuff on it. I was going to ask you about it.
I took it, and...
It's worth it?
It's okay. It's a lot of Google AdWords stuff. But I've learned there's a, like, it depends on if you're doing it for a website. So there are several different websites out there, right? Moz, Raven, some of these other SEO websites where they'll scan your website and then it'll show you what to fix and how to improve stuff. RIYTE is good. You son of a bitch. and so a lot of times it's better when you're just working with a website and learning it that way than to go through, like, what, because it's so general that you just don't really learn a ton. So, but try it out. See if it fits your needs. Give it a go. Let's see here. The Mevo has been way less glitchy since I got the hotspot.
Mm-hmm.
But still kind of glitchy. There's a new Mevo version. And I really want it, but I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. I've been working on my Elizabeth Warren impression, too, which I'm going to debut tonight. Have you ever heard Elizabeth Warren talk?
I try not to.
She talks just like this. I'm so concerned about my cheekbones.
The cheekbones.
She kind of, Elizabeth Warren kind of talks like, I'm so sad, Santa. One of the misfit toys.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Let's see. Gee willikers. All right. Check 1, 2. Hey. Check 1, 2. Hey, check 1, 2. Check. Hey, everybody. Hey.
Maybe I should make a live stream.
You should.
Discord chat room.
That's what we literally have the Facebook chat for.
So hard to follow. It's like crap. It's like
yeah. So let's create.
So you've got like God tier.
Uh-huh.
Which is Twitch chat. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Then right underneath it, YouTube chat. Okay.
Vibbert, right. Hold on. Vibbert's a little fuck. Audio didn't mess up when the old gang was on the show. let's see here.
I would respect that as someone who was on, like, the, you know, the number one podcast.
Yeah, he's not even on the number one podcast anymore. He's like number 30.
Yeah.
How can we take somebody seriously when they're on podcast 30?
Yeah. What is that, negative 300%?
Right. Sounds like you're losing to me, pal. All right.
Sounds for the family.
Check 1, 2. Check. Why is it like that?